And so it begins.
Dun, dun, dun. The end of our friendships.
So if you're just starting this podcast, you might want to get some food, get some drink.
Yep, yep.
Unless you're driving. Don't get drunk if you're driving.
Spoiler alert. We're going to talk about stuff in detail.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk about stuff in detail. So anything we're talking about here, we're going to probably spoil a lot of stuff.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, we're not going to hold back.
It's all stuff that's been out for a while. So
we should do an intro just in case this is like people hearing us for the first time.
Yeah. So this is the Big Planet Comics podcast. You can subscribe to this on iTunes. You can check us out on Facebook at Big Planet or Facebook.com/Big Planet Comics,
where we have a lot of these polls up so you can join in the voting.
Yeah. I'm Kevin.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Jared.
And we're doing our best of 2011.
All at once.
So basically, we've got a few categories here. I think 10 categories.
Nine
categories. And we've got 10 books for each category. What we're going to try to do is whittle those down to our top three and then pick a winner for each category. And like Jared said, we're going to have polls up on our Facebook page, and we're going to do listener choice, People's Choice Award version.
People's Choice
Awards, too. So the
award of the choice of the people.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't come up with a name for our award.
The Golden Globies, because we're a planet.
The Golden Planet?
Golden Planets.
The Riels.
The Yearly Planet.
Yeah, these are the Louis Riel Awards.
I like those.
Yeah.
That's not bad, actually. Yeah.
All right, so so we should just get right into this. This is probably going to be a fairly contentious podcast.
Afraid so.
From what I understand, though, people like to listen to us fight.
Bicker. Like the old married triumvirate we are.
So let's just get into this first category. I shouldn't use sound effects on this.
I think we need sound effects.
Just to break it up a little bit.
Yep.
We need some award music.
I just need to know where that one is for when we pick the
winner.
I was looking at like royalty free award show music today.
Nice.
I didn't find anything that was worthwhile. Anyway, so our first category is best new series. I'm just going to run through
2011.
Of 2011. I'm going to run through all the nominees here.
And the nominees are
Animal Man,
mm-hmm.
Batman, which is kind of weird, but Daredevil, iVampire, Punisher, Rachel Rising, Swamp Thing, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, Wolverine and the X-Men, and Wonder Woman.
We got a few DC New 52 books on here.
We do. We have quite a few, actually. We've got five.
Wow.
Well, yeah. DC is just going to naturally have a slight advantage there because they relaunched all of their books, thereby making them fit into the new series.
They have the most new series of the year, yeah.
They do. Yep. That's definitely true, which makes this, a good category this year, I feel
like. Yeah, that's a good point.
So let's start out with Animal Man.
All right. It's pretty good.
Yeah, so Animal Man is a new series by Jeff Lemire and Travel Foreman. I think the reason that it made it on the list is because it's part of the new DC universe, but it's kind of its own thing.
It's very different from what DC had done before, certainly in their mainstream universe.
It feels like a good mixture of a DC Vertigo book and like a normal DC universe book.
Right. Which is, I think, probably the same reason Swamp Thing is on here as well, by Scott Snyder and Yannick Paquette.
And the cool thing about both those books is they've been, throughout the year, closely intertwined. Swamp Thing is about the green, Animal Man's about the red, and they're both kind of fighting the rot, which is the third evil.
Yeah, the idea of like animal life and plant life against like entropy and decay.
Death, yeah.
Which all fits together as a very good theme.
And so then we've got Batman on here, which is kind of it's just weird to see Batman on the best new series list, but like we said, DC relaunched everything.
I don't know, this character's going places. He's got some
legs.
He's got some legs, but he doesn't have any parents.
Aww.
All right, so I mean, this has been great. It's, you know, Scott Snyder is writing it, and art by Greg Capullo, which I would not usually say that Greg Capullo's art is good, but in this, it's actually been pretty good.
Yeah, I think last year he would have been on my worst of list, but this year he's on my best of.
Like the first time he's really been unleashed to do his own style, though, right?
Yeah.
Like he's always aping some other terrible
artist.
Yeah,
he's usually been doing like Todd McFarlane, basically.
Yep.
Yeah. But the cool thing about this is Snyder wrote the Detective Comics stuff, which was very like a very focused story, but now he's writing a sort of bigger story that encompasses all of the sort of Gotham City and Batman's universe. So it's been good stuff.
He just had like the right tone for Batman to start it off, and he's doing great with it under his own vision.
So Daredevil, which has been a big favorite for us around here.
Yeah, another one that's sort of a dodgy quote of a relaunch, but it's a new number one.
Well, and it's such
but
a new
this
tone.
One is, again, a new team and a new direction for the character.
It's crazy that after, I don't know, like, what is it, like 20 years or more, like 40 years of really dark, gritty, like Daredevil stories.
The most abused, like 30 years, basically.
The most abused character in the Marvel
like,
universe.
Like, this comes around and it still feels very much in the universe and in continuity. And it's just so much more fun, just lighthearted, and just it's it's quite a turnaround.
And this is by Mark Waid, and art by Marcos Martin and Paolo Rivera, who both do a similar style, which is very sort of reverential to the old like Ditko and Jack Kirby stuff.
Right.
It's very awesome. And then we've got iVampire on here, which is another DC book. And it's also part of their, I don't know what they call that, like the dark line or
the edge.
They call
it the dark, or the, both probably.
And this is, again, it's very separate from everything, it seems. I mean, it takes place in the DC universe, but it's about this brother and sister who are both vampires who take very different views.
Well, not brother and sister.
Oh, no.
They're lovers.
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's important.
I was thinking of Game of Thrones.
He turned her into a vampire, and now she's like the vampire queen, but he wants to kill her and all the evil vampires.
And, who is this by?
Joshua Hale Fieldkoff.
Yeah, and art by Andrea Sorrentino, maybe? The art style.
Sounds right.
Or basically art by Jay Lee. The art's great, but it's very akin to Jay Lee. And it's cool. She thinks that basically vampires are the next evolution.
Yeah, destined to rule the world.
Yep. And she thinks that like super people are getting in the way of that, so she wants to take them all out.
Which
is
a great contrast.
Yeah. And all the humans as well.
And it's slowly escalating into a giant vampire war, but it's also actually got a little bit of lightheartedness. They introduced the character in somewhere in the third or fourth issue that's like really lighthearted and adds some humor, much needed humor.
It started
getting a little too serious, but it's great. Yeah.
And then we've got Punisher, which was definitely one of Nick's choices.
Rucka restarting the character after a million restarts.
This is very much the spiritual successor to Gotham Central, because it's a lot about the police officers that work in the city tracking
the Punisher.
Because the Punisher actually doesn't have a word of dialogue for the first three issues.
It's all like from the police perspective of dealing with police crimes.
Yeah, he just shows up as like a force. Yeah. And then he's had more dialogue recently. There's a little more characterization. There's a cool new characters that they've introduced, like the detective, and then there's a kind of almost a new Punisher.
Yeah, so it's bringing some of that tone that maybe we saw in Garth Ennis's Punisher Max stuff into the regular Marvel universe in its Punisher book.
Yeah, but like you said, much more rooted in Rucka's old, like Gotham Central, of like here's real police procedural stuff dealing with a superhero universe.
It doesn't forget to include everything like the Vulture and like crazy Spider-Man stuff, and like it's all in there.
Yeah.
And then next on the list, we've got Rachel Rising by Terry Moore.
So Terry Moore, of course, did Strangers in Paradise and Echo recently, and this one is kind of his more supernatural take. A girl, Rachel, literally the opening issue is her digging herself out of a shallow grave and then being like, what happened? And stumbling back, not realizing that for all intents and purposes, she might actually be dead. And of course, the mystery behind that and, you know, interacting with all her old friends after she's disappeared for so long and trying to figure out what happened.
Yeah, very similar to Echo in a lot of ways, except instead of being science fiction, it's horror. But I say that as a compliment because Echo was a fantastic series.
Right.
Yeah, it's very dark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is nice. Usually we talk about things we like, things we kind of like, things that we don't like. But this is all like stuff that's awesome. And then Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, which is it's so good. This is Brian Michael Bendis, who's been writing Ultimate Spider-Man forever, and Sarah Pacelli on the art. She's great, but
caused a lot of controversy when it first came out
because Spider-Man is black and Latino.
Yeah. Yep.
And
he's a new guy, basically, which shocked a lot of people.
There's a lot of backlash.
It's not Peter Parker.
A lot of people proved themselves to be very racist on message boards when this came out.
Even the ones that were like, oh, Marvel's just doing this to be PC or whatever.
That just means you're a racist.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, read the comic. It's a great story. You know, don't be an idiot. But anyway, and it is a great story.
But yeah, it stays within the Ultimate Universe. So it's just Peter Parker died very recently, and basically, the concept is that whatever radioactive spider bit Peter Parker,
there's more of them.
Different group of spiders was also radiated, and this poor kid, Miles, is bitten by a different one. And so, although he is a new Spider-Man type person, he has different spider powers, which I thought was very clever.
And it plays on classic Spider-Man things like Miles Monroe is the main character. He has a very interesting Miles Morales. Yeah, he has a very interesting relationship with his uncle, who he really admires. But it's a twist on the sort of Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
And his uncle is the thief.
I don't think about that. That's brilliant.
It takes the family dynamic that has been such a part of Spider-Man for a long time and turns it on its head, and it just really works. It's great.
Yeah.
And then Wolverine and the X-Men, which is a new Wolverine series by Jason Aaron and
the most fun
and Chris Bacalo, and it's kind of taking X-Men back to its roots a little bit.
Yeah, and it's more fun than any X-Men book has been in decades. It's just like lighthearted, goofy, but still has like a good
full of action and
yeah, but it's got a good heart behind it, and there's great little character moments.
A lot of good characters.
Full of character. Like each issue is full of stuff. Like it's very dense and just awesome.
And then Bacalo's art fits it so well. I mean, he's got a very cartoony style. The first issue of this was such a nice surprise because X-Men can be so overwrought sometimes.
Right.
But this is just such a fun comic.
It's just Wolverine trying to restart a school for mutants, but this time Wolverine is the headmaster instead of the rebellious pupil. And so, again, flipping something on
its head. It's angsty without being like super angsty. Like the story isn't angsty. You know, it doesn't feel angsty. Like the teenagers are all angsty, but.
Yeah, it's not. It's yeah. Some of the characters are angsty, but the story itself is not oppressive.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and then last on our list here, just because it's in alphabetical order, is Wonder Woman.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, this is a radical relaunch from the DC universe. This is Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chang, who just again are a perfect team. Like Azzarello basically treated Wonder Woman as a Greek mythology, like as the real root of the story, like a lot of other people did, but in a horror tone. So that you see a lot more of like these monstrous things from Greek myth and the gods being very involved with it. And of course, Cliff Chang's just dark art perfectly matching the story.
And yeah, kind of closer to like kind of how the gods are portrayed in like the original myths. Like they're not like
they're
not like superheroes. They're like, they're like almost evil. Just don't care about humans. Just kind of.
Yeah. They're like playthings.
Yeah, yeah. They're just gods, you know? And, this is probably the best Wonder Woman run I've ever read.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, the Ruckus stuff was really good, but I think that this works better than that even.
Yeah.
So here we get to the tough part.
All right.
We got to make these 10 books into 3 books.
We can do it.
So
so we're going to do this as our individual top one book and then pick a...
No,
we're just going to have to fight over. You know, basically, if it's somebody's favorite book, we're not going to pull it off, obviously.
Right, maybe.
But, we'll probably have a consensus on some things.
Sure.
So kind of, I think what we have to do is we have to whittle it down a little bit.
Right.
So I'm gonna go off. I'm going to say iVampire is a great book, but because it's so similar to maybe Animal Man and Swamp Thing, I don't think it maybe belongs in the top three.
Interesting.
And the same is true of Swamp Thing, just because I think out of those books, Animal Man is really the best one.
So just by comparing those three, Animal Man, I would agree, is the best of those three.
Yeah, they're all very similar in tone.
Bringing like a dark Vertigo sense to the DC universe.
Yeah. And Animal Man and Swamp Thing are so closely tied that they're almost indistinguishable. I mean,
I'll say not indistinguishable because I think the art on Animal Man is better.
Yeah. Well,
Yannick Marquette is really good.
Yeah, the Swamp Thing art is really amazing.
I like the Animal Man art.
We're being friendly so far.
But
it just turns into a fight.
Yeah, I think if we kind of look at those three books together, I think they all have a kind of a similar style. And definitely Animal Man is probably the best of those.
We're gonna stick Animal Man in our top three, we think, out of these so far?
Well,
It's not eliminated yet. We'll say that.
No.
Okay. All right, so we got a few other things. Let's talk about like Batman and Wonder Woman. Do you think both of those belong up there?
Ooh, God.
That's not as similar, like I said, because Wonder Woman's such a different take on it. Batman is just a straightforward, really, really good superhero book. And Wonder Woman is a very different superhero book.
Yeah, and I think that brings up a good point of like Batman's not doing a lot of new stuff.
That's what I was gonna say. Wonder Woman feels the more awesome. Like the most like new, fresh take on something.
Yeah,
that we haven't seen before. Like Batman is amazing. It's really well written, really so great. Good. But there's nothing revolutionary about it.
That's going to be the problem. All these things are really great because I think you could say the same thing about Punisher. It's not like it's not the newest thing under the sun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when you say best new series, I think we're talking about things that bring something new.
Yeah, yeah, all those, these are series that started last year. We're still looking for something new and fresh. I agree with that.
So, so that leaves us with. Rachel Rising, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, and Wolverine and the X-Men potentially. Oh, and Daredevil.
Oh, man. Yeah, those are all.
Oh, wow. There's only 3 slots for each of these.
Wow.
So I'm going to say Animal Man should be there in the top 3 for me personally. I think it's probably the best book of the DC relaunch. And
I'll stick with that. Yeah.
And Daredevil, we all love Daredevil.
Daredevil is...
See, I don't know if Animal Man's going to make it because Daredevil is so astounding.
But we've got 3 books.
Oh, I agree. But I'm saying that Animal Man may come out 4th for me.
I think we should just go ahead and put Daredevil in there.
All right, I disagree with that.
Like, I think we can all agree on Daredevil.
It fits all the categories. It's like the best, like, just straight-up superhero comic, and it's the most revolutionary take on the character because he's been dark for so long and it's like lighthearted.
And like
fun.
The art, the things these guys do is like so radical. It's like the sort of thing that it's not only great art, it's great comic art.
Yeah.
That they're doing things with like the layout and the pages and like how Daredevil's like radar sense affects the world and what he can see, and just like, oh, it's so,
yeah, it's a weird thing that nobody's, people yeah. kind of tried it before, but this is the best example I've seen,
and
where
it's so well done.
You see yeah. how he hears, basically. It's really cool.
So do you guys think Rachel Rising makes it in the top three? It's a great Ooh. Book, but for me, it doesn't get in there.
No. I think, yeah, again, it's great, and it's certainly something new, but not new enough, maybe?
Yeah, it definitely feels like a Terry Moore book.
Yeah, which is great.
Just but, really good, but yeah.
Now, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, I mean, it is similar to Spider-Man.
That's true.
But it's also... It just feels so fresh to me right now when yeah. I read it. I always get so excited when the new issues come out.
I think it may just have some of the best written characters and dialogue of any comics right now. So yeah. that's pushing it up.
And Wolverine and the X-Men.
It might Ooh. Be one of the most fun comics out there.
It might be.
Jeez.
I don't want to have three Marvel books because, you know.
Well, we got Animal Man.
Yeah, I think Animal. But Jared's nope. not so sure about nope, Animal nope, Man. Nope. He might get outvoted on that one.
Oh, no, that's we'll fine. But I'm saying I'm going to
We got you. Animal Man, Daredevil. We still got Wonder Woman in the running, right?
Yep. All the Wolverine and X-Men and Ultimate Spider-Man.
I think we can cut Wolverine and the X-Men from this, personally.
You think so?
From the top three, I think so. I think it's a great
fun
book.
Doesn't always mean like perfection or yeah. or greatness.
Yeah. And it may end up on here next year.
That's true.
I think it's only had three issues.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of these will end up in best ongoing next year, best ongoing series.
Yeah.
But as far as best new, I don't... Yeah, it's all these are still fairly new, but I just don't think Wolverine and the X-Men makes the cut. All right, so I think what we're looking at now is Wonder Woman, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, Daredevil, and Animal Man. We're picking from those.
Yep, and like I said, I was pretty sure how that was going to fall out, that Animal Man's my fourth, and Daredevil, Ultimate Spider-Man, and Wonder Woman are my top three.
Ooh.
See? Yeah, it's tough. You know, like third or fourth could swap around in some of those.
All right, so we'll each do our top three. We'll see if that cuts it down a little bit more. What do you think, Nick?
I'm thinking Daredevil.
Yep,
definitely.
Ultimate Spider-Man and Animal Man. I got to do it. I got to say.
I'm going Daredevil, Ultimate Spider-Man, and Animal Man.
Yeah, you guys would do it. Animal Man is crazy good, but like, I think it's maybe I've been wanting to see this from Wonder Woman for so long. Yeah. Just like, she's the biggest character in the Marvel universe, like one of the top three, and she's never been good, really.
Yeah.
And Animal Man had such a good run under Grant Morrison back in the day that he's already kind of been established as like, in a lot of ways, it was back to that quirky, awesome, weird style and with really good art, which the Grant Morrison stuff didn't have. But Wonder Woman was a revelation, you know?
Yeah, it's so close, God.
What should we do? I can see Jared's point on this.
I mean, just on the voting, I think you guys are going to push me out, and I'm not disagreeing.
But no, I mean, that's the thing. We're all supposed to kind of make our cases, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It could go either way.
The one thing about Wonder Woman is that it's not just Wonder Woman that's different. It's like the whole universe is different. Like all of the gods are completely different from what they were in any previous incarnation.
We could go Wonder Woman, Animal Man, Daredevil.
I can't drop Ultimate Spider-Man.
Ooh, Ultimate Spider-Man, yeah.
All right.
Oh, man.
I think we should go Wonder Woman.
I'm thinking of...
Oh, I might be swaying Kevin.
I don't know.
I don't know. We need to decide though, because we've got a lot of these to go through. That's so true. We'll just go with the voting. We're gonna say Animal Man, Daredevil, and Ultimate Comics Spider Man.
Yep. And I will say though that
Wonder Woman is a really close runner up.
Cliff Chang, astounding. Yeah.
And I think the second part is a little easier of picking our winner, which I'm gonna say Daredevil.
Daredevil.
Yeah, Daredevil.
Daredevil it is.
All right,
so that was best new series. We picked Animal Man, Daredevil, and Ultimate Comics Spider-Man as our top three, and Daredevil's our winner.
All right,
so let's move on to maybe a slightly less contentious category.
We'll see.
This is best reprint.
Yes.
What we have here is Captain Easy Volume 2, 1936-37, Crime Does Not Pay, Donald Duck Lost in the Andes, The Death Ray, Hark a Vagrant, Manara Library 1, Indian Summer and Other Stories, Milk and Cheese, Dairy Products Gone Bad, Pogo Volume 1, Through the Wild Blue Yonder, Tank Tankuro, and the Ecstatics Omnibus.
Yeah.
Well, this will be a little contentious. We got to go through all these each by time. But the problem with best reprint is part of the thing about reprints is it can be just like, oh my God, I'm so excited this is available again. And some of them are like, look at the production value on this oversized deluxe super edition that just has come out.
It's true. Yeah. So let's start with Captain Easy.
Yep.
I love Captain Easy. This is by Roy Crane. It's an adventure comic from the 30s.
It's like it's just fun and like over the top in some ways, but rooted. I don't know.
And it was very influential on like guys like Carl Barks and I want to say Hergé. I don't know if he actually read it, but
I bet he did.
But definitely Milton Caniff and stuff like Indiana Jones. And
this is definitely one of the only things on this list that I haven't read.
Yeah. Well, this is a great book, but I'm going to go ahead. I mean, this was one of my choices. I just wanted to see it in the top 10, but I'm going to go ahead and say we can cut it from the top three.
Well, let's keep going.
Yeah, let's keep going.
Sorry, you can drop it out later. But
Crime Does Not Pay.
This one was amazing. Crime Does Not Pay was one of the big crime series, but it became one of the most popular comic books of the time. Was it the 40s or the 50s? The 40s? Yeah. And it was just like, for the most part, true crime stories that they were just adapting into like the most lurid, pulpy stuff. And this was basically what got comic books in trouble in the 50s because they were so over the top and so violent and just so like awesome.
And written by a guy who became a crime comic himself.
That's the best part of
what. That's what makes it so interesting. Yeah. Is Bob Wood, who was
one of the main writers.
One of the main writers actually killed this woman in a hotel room with like an iron.
Yeah.
And it's such a lascivious story, but.
Yeah.
But fits in with the tone of this, and it's part of what makes this book so great is that you get that story in the beginning of it.
Yeah,
but it's prose, but still cool.
But a very nice reprint where they do like the style looking very much like the old comics with the slightly yellowed paper, and just these comics are really cool.
Yeah, it's a great collection. And then Donald Duck Lost in the Andes. This is Carl Barks.
Oh, my God.
And basically, so Fantagraphics is collecting all of Carl Barks' Donald Duck comics, but instead of starting at the beginning, what they decided to do was start at the height.
Near the height.
Well, Carl Barks always said Lost in the Andes was his favorite story. So they started with that. And I think this is from maybe 47.
Around then, yeah.
But it's great stuff. I mean, it's Carl Barks.
It's all downhill from here.
He's not only the best Donald Duck artist of all time. He's, in my opinion, maybe the best comics artist of all time. Just creator as far as his storytelling ability and his cartooning ability.
And he did so much for the Disney universe. Like, basically any Duck character that you can think of, like Uncle Scrooge or Gyro Gearloose or any of the supporting cast, there's like a 95% chance he made them up.
Yeah, Huey, Dewey, Louie.
Right. Yeah. And of course, that stuff is so popular. Like his mythos he created is so popular in Europe. It never caught on in the U.S. quite as much.
Well, it did somewhat.
Well, DuckTales.
DuckTales.
All right, if you saw the DuckTales cartoon show, every character on there, everything, his. It's amazing.
I always feel like people think we're idiots when we talk about this because it's Donald Duck. But hopefully people are starting to know.
Yes, because everyone who's actually read it, you know, shaking their heads at our stupid recommendations have come back and said, you're right. Because this is just really fun adventure. But it's also an interesting mix because it covers a lot of the different styles he did. There are like short 8-page stories, which are like more simple stories. Very short 1-page gag strips, like any funny comic strip you would read, which are very funny. And then the much longer Lost in the Andes, which are great adventure stories.
Yeah, it's great. All right, so moving on to Death Ray by Dan Clowes. This was an issue of 8-Ball that came out a couple years ago. And that now has been recollected in a
very nice
hardcover book. It's basically about a couple kids that find a Death Ray and how that doesn't have to necessarily be a superhero story.
Oh.
And it's really well told. It's really melancholy. I mean, it's Dan Clowes' typical sort of deadpan style. It's great. I mean, it definitely belongs on this list, and it's a very cool comic and a beautiful book.
Yeah, true. Did a good job on it.
All right, moving on to Hark a Vagrant by Kate Beaton.
Yeah, one of the best ongoing web comics.
Yeah,
it's mostly like literary based comic strips. There's one of my favorite things on her site is when she uses like old covers and tries to just kind of make a strip based on what the cover looks like and the name of the title of the book.
Oh, that's so much fun. Yeah,
there's like the Nancy Drew series. They're like Nancy Drew and the Island of Alligators. And she's like falls into the island. She's like, yo, there's alligators everywhere. She's like, oh, I see. This all makes sense now.
And a lot of stories based on like Canadian history and Victorian history. And then some other weird things like Sexy Batman.
Always good.
Sexy Batman's great. Yeah, but this is
what's that little pony?
Oh, Fat Pony.
Fat Pony's
good stuff. All right, so moving on to the Manara Library, Jared. I know you're a big Manara fan.
So this is Milo Manara, like one of his reintroductions into the American market. He is primarily known for his very lurid erotica, and this is definitely erotic material. But this is more of the story slanted things.
Because, it's also definitely still lurid.
Oh, I'm agreeing. But this is not straight up erotica. This is stuff. The main story in this is written by Hugo Pratt, who's one of the greatest comic creators of all time. He wrote this and Manara drew it. It's like, you know, early Americana, like Pilgrim era stuff, just as adventure stories. And just beautiful, oversized production. Again, this is going to get some points just because it's such a nice looking book.
Yeah.
Moving on to Milk and Cheese, Dairy Products Gone Bad hardcover. This is Evan Dorkin's famed, or I say famed, who knows?
Infamed.
Milk and Cheese strip. This collects everything.
Everything ever.
And it's basically about a carton of milk and a wedge of cheese that like to beat the crap out of people and drink a lot of gin and make fun of people.
Be super violent.
And watch TV.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. And it's, but it's
brilliant.
But
it's, so
but it's hilarious and brilliant. Yeah. So
very dark.
And then next up is Pogo Volume 1, Through the Wild Blue Yonder.
People have been waiting for this for a long time.
It's been a long time coming. Yeah, Fantagraphics was putting this together, and then they decided they wanted to get a lot more original art because they weren't particularly happy, from what I understand, with
the reproduction. Way it was turning
out. Yeah, so they got a lot more of the original art and put out a beautiful Pogo book.
Yeah, it's great.
Beautiful. Yeah.
It's chronological. They're doing, what, 10 volumes, I think?
More. I don't know.
And Pogo's just a story about Pogo the possum living down in the swamp.
Basically,
in the bayou.
All talking animals down in the swamp who just are just. He writes a lot in dialect, so it's a lot of like southern styled stuff, but it just flows so well. And all the animals have such vibrant personalities. But he also does it to do a lot of very funny commentaries on life and like politics and stuff that seems terrible when I say it, but it just comes off so well.
And they all have really interesting relationships with one another, so they all interact differently. It's a great comic.
But his art's amazing, too. A huge influence on Bone. If you like Bone, you will probably like this. And obviously, this is where Jeff Smith got it.
Yeah, definitely. And next up is Tank Tankuro.
Oh, my God.
Which
so bizarre.
I unfortunately cannot remember the name of the guy that drew these Tank Tankuro comics. But anyway, Tank Tankuro was a progenitor to things like Astro Boy.
Very early Japanese.
Yeah, in the 30s, actually, this was coming out. And these are like really weird giant robot comics from the 30s that are in ways similar to newer things, like sort of picture boxy or style, stuff like forming. It's totally...
But it's like a transforming robot tank who's a robot man who can do all kinds of... Like any cool thing that... Silly thing that you would do with a comic book character, he did it first, you know.
And because it's so early, it's very strange because it doesn't look like anything else. The page layouts are really weird. There aren't really panels, and everything's just insane and beautiful, and I love it. And it's a fantastic looking book.
Right.
It's got a cover by Chris Ware, right?
It does have a cover by Chris Ware.
I didn't realize that.
And then last on our list is The Ecstatics Omnibus by Peter Milligan and Mike Allred.
And a bunch of other people.
And Darwin Cook and Paul Pope and Nick Dragota and some other people.
Yeah. This is probably my favorite superhero comic of all time.
Oh, wow.
Definitely. I think it is. I think it's the number one. It's really close. I couldn't even think of anything else that's as awesome as this throughout the whole run, you know. This is a good, 60 issues of a comic
A thousand pages?
It started off as X-Force for, 20 issues or 30 issues or whatever, and then changed to Ecstatics for a while. And there's some miniseries, the Wolverine Dupe miniseries is in this, and it's got drawn by Darwin Cook, and it's incredible. There's some issues drawn by Paul Pope. It's just so much goodness.
But there's a reason why it's so good.
Yeah. Well, the main thing behind it is that... X-Force was, Cable and all these other mutants, but then all of a sudden it just changed into this completely different thing that was just mutants having a reality show and selling toys and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's the idea of the first issue is famous rather than powerful.
And in the first issue, almost all of the characters die.
Yep.
and then all these new characters are introduced, and they're kind of silly and goofy, but there's always good... character stuff behind them. One of the characters is fat with a PH, and he just basically get fat.
Yeah.
There's a guy who turns into a werewolf, and he's got all sorts of problems with that.
Isn't his name Vivisic?
Yeah. But one of the things that's really big about this that isn't actually in the comic or has anything to do with the comic is that this is one of the first books that kind of got Marvel going on their current where they are right now. Like at the time, it was still just kind of 90s style, and then this came and it was completely different and more of an indie tone, and a lot more of that stuff got incorporated into the series, different series, and this is kind of the beginning of all that. Daredevil started after this, and then New Avengers and all that kind of started just because of this.
Yeah, and it's so much about celebrity culture in a way that kind of... It almost predicts the reality
it's
television.
It's reality TV applied to superheroes.
Yeah, but this was before reality television was this huge thing like this. There was stuff like Real World maybe. But so that's the list. It's a good list. But I don't think it's going to be too hard to whittle this one down. We'll see. Once we get down to brass tacks towards the end, it's going to be tough. I'm going to say Captain Easy. I love it. But I'm happy to take it off. And It's a great book, but it's some of these things are like revelatory.
Right. True.
And Crime Does Not Pay. I liked it, and I like what the concept, and I like everything about it, but I don't know if I would ever read all of it, like,
again,
more than
it's
once.
A revelation, but as good as they were at the time, it still has not aged as like the greatest comic.
It's not like
ever.
Something you would read over and over again and be like, I love this. Like, right. It's just like, yeah, like, oh, that's crazy, that's goofy, and then you would never read it again, you know?
Yeah, it's more like a nice artifact than right. like something that's like you're reading it and it's amazing,
right?
Kind
right.
of thing. Donald Duck is not coming off of this list. Lost in the Andes.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the best.
I think we can all agree on that. Death Ray is, it's a great story.
Yeah,
but I think this reprint doesn't really
do it justice, or
it just doesn't really add anything, or kind
that.
Of
it's just bigger.
Yeah, it's not even. I don't even think it is bigger. I mean, that issue was huge. So it's just a hardcover. Yeah. Harker Vagrant's kind of a tough one.
Ooh.
It's a webcomic that definitely deserved
a nice book. We'll leave
that
one on
there.
This one's probably better read on the web.
Really?
I think that might be true. Although it does have like commentary on a lot of the.
I like the commentary.
But those are on the website too.
Oh, are they? Yeah. Manara Library. Jared's a big fan. I don't think Nick and I are probably going to let that one. It is pretty.
The art is beautiful.
The translation is good.
There's lots of incest and grossness in this. And the story is not like amazing.
It isn't that amazing, the story.
I'm not taking it off. Keep going. We'll see what we get.
All right. We'll see. Milk and Cheese, I love. But I just don't think it belongs on here with
no,
some of this other stuff.
Like Milk and Cheese is
brilliant,
but it's on a
long
very
time coming.
Small theme.
I pretty much see in my top three here that I'm going to be pushing for, but we'll see.
Right,
I don't want to take Pogo off yet.
Okay.
It's a beautiful book.
I wouldn't take it off yet.
And it's never really been collected in a way like this.
The way it deserves. No, definitely not.
Tank Tank Kuro is like my pet book that's on here.
This is also like an artifact, though. It's like a weird thing that you would.
It's brilliant.
Except I've read the whole thing, and I'll probably read it again.
Yeah. Sure.
But it's more of an artifact, like, as like, here's a weird, crazy.
Of like the progenitor of so much stuff rather than a classic.
And then the Ecstatics Omnibus I want to leave on here for now.
Yes.
So massive.
For sure. So it looks like we're down to Ecstatics, Pogo, Manara, and Donald Duck.
Really?
Yeah.
There's not a fifth one on there?
Nope. Harker Vagrant, I think we decided wasn't going to make it in.
Okay.
So Ecstatics, Pogo.
Let's vote.
Manara and Donald Duck. Jared, Manara is not going to make this top three.
Yeah. I'd give it like number four, but Pogo is going to beat it out.
Yeah.
Just for, because Manara's art is astounding, but I think I agree that the story is, while good by Pratt's done so much better stuff, it just doesn't hold up.
All right, so our top three is Donald Duck, Pogo, and the Ecstatics Omnibus.
Oh, but now top one. This will be a tough one.
For me, it's not so tough.
What you got?
I love Ecstatics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it so much. I love Pogo.
Yeah.
But Donald Duck.
I see your point.
It's so good. This has been collected before, but in like just weird ways, and never really this wonderfully. I don't know.
I'm gonna go with Ecstatics.
Yeah, I know, and I can understand it.
My main reasoning behind it is that the Donald Duck stuff is amazing and it's great read, but I would read Ecstatics like over. I'll read it like a million times. Like when it was coming out originally, I read every issue like over and over again. It was so good.
I mean, I don't buy a lot of comics at this point, but I definitely bought all these top three.
Yeah, I bought all of them. Well, I didn't buy Pogo. Pogo is actually my least favorite on this list, but
but you understand why it makes it.
I can see that there's stuff on
like, I wouldn't read all of Pogo.
Yeah, I appreciate it, but I don't want to buy it, but you should buy Pogo. I have all the old editions of Pogo and I'm going to buy this new one.
So Jared, it doesn't seem like you're going to pick Pogo. So are you going to pick Donald Duck or are you going to pick Ecstatics? Because you're the decision maker here.
See, like, the thing with Nick's argument is it's kind of like what he just said is like the opposite for me, because Ecstatics is so long.
Yeah.
That it feels like too much in some ways. And for Donald Duck, you just have this perfect little book.
Well, it's volume one.
That's true.
And Ecstatics is like a whole thing, you know? It's
it's complete.
I can see it going either way.
You're saying the whole thing, then I'm going to have to go with Ecstatics.
You're going with Ecstatics?
It's astoundingly huge.
That's fine. I mean, that is certainly my second choice.
Yeah.
Probably going to catch a lot of flack for this. We might want to add Donald Duck to our Best Kids comic list.
It's not already on there.
But we're going with Ecstatics.
We're going to do it.
Yeah.
The Ecstatics
Omnibus. Two-thirds consensus.
Yeah, it's
1.5 consensus.
No, I'm totally there with you. I totally understand.
It's definitely the thing I was
that.
Most excited about this year.
Yeah.
And it's such a beautiful, crazy thing.
All right, so that's it. It was our top three were Ecstatics Omnibus, Donald Duck, and Pogo.
Where's the sound effects, man?
Oh, yeah, and our winner is Ecstatics Omnibus.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so that was a double toot. All right, so moving on to the Best Artist category.
To present this award, we have Nipsey Russell in here.
And the 1984 awesome. U.S. Hockey team.
It'd be so good if Nipsey Russell was here.
He would.
Isn't he dead?
Hope not.
Well, I feel like he just died.
Well, then it would be even better if he was here.
Yeah.
This one's going to be a tough category, I think, because it's artist. Well, it's all personal preference, but this is very much like personal preference.
Yeah, because there's things that just like some people find some sorts of art appealing and other people. We've had people come in the store and say stuff like, I don't like the new Daredevil because the art's terrible. And you just sit there with your mouth agape. But
and we say, get out.
Well, no, we throw stuff at them until they get out. But
throw copies of Infinite at them.
Yeah. That's true.
I think we're going to have pretty close agreements on this.
Yeah, I think we will too. So let's just go through these.
Because there's I'll say that a lot of these have great art styles, but they are very different.
That's
definitely
true.
So there may be some disagreements.
I don't want to spend a lot of time describing these people's art styles. Let's talk about what they've worked on.
Say what they've done.
So yeah. Marcos Martin works on Daredevil.
And some Spider-Man.
He has a pop art style that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Ramon Perez did a book called Tale of Sand, which maybe not a lot of people have seen, but it's adapted from an unpublished or unproduced Jim Henson script.
Great art. Crazy layouts.
And a very complicated story, which he nails perfectly.
Because almost all of it's visual. So.
Yeah. Jerome Pena, who's been drawing Uncanny X-Force with much aplomb.
Yes.
It's good stuff. Craig Thompson, who of course drew Habibi
and blankets
and blankets. Yeah, but this is nominated for Habibi, of course. R.M. Guerra, who is the artist on Scalped.
Yep.
J.H. Williams, who does beautiful, beautiful stuff on Batwoman.
Did Desolation Jones and some old detective stuff.
Promethea. Yeah.
Promethea, yes.
Trad Moore, who's a guy that just popped up on this list. He's been drawing Strange Talent of Luther Strode, and it's got such a kinetic style. We definitely had to put him on here. Francisco Francavilla, who wins the Most Art of the Year award.
Yeah, he drew Scott Snyder's Batman run.
Right.
Like the Detective Comics run.
Yeah, what's in the Black Mirror hardcover.
Yeah, he's done the Black Panther.
And tons of covers.
Covers for everything from Archie to Dark Shadows, to Planet of the Apes, to Flash Gordon.
Ape Sapien, Lone Ranger.
Lone Ranger, Batman, like everything.
Warlord
he's done a cover
Mars.
For everything. Even Archie Meets Kiss, he's done covers for.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, incredible. We have to order more copies of that if we want those, unfortunately.
We should do that.
And then Nate Simpson, who only put out one comic this year, but if you look at it, you can understand why. It's a non-player number one. It's like Jeff Darrow on Adderall.
Yeah,
it's
good. Well put.
This is going to be a tough one.
This is going to be hard.
I'm going to start out with Trad Moore. I think it's great that we put him on the top 10, but I don't think he makes it into the top three for me. His style is cool, but I don't think...
It's very much in the vein of like Invincible.
Like Corey Walker. I think so.
Okay, I could see that.
Travel Foreman, I forgot to mention. He's another one on the list. He's the Animal Man artist. Nate Simpson, I love. I don't know if he makes it.
Whoa.
All right. All right, let's just go through the list. Marcos Martin, I don't think any of us want to take him off just yet.
Wow, no. He's so good.
Ramon Perez, I love Tale of Sand, but this is some pretty crazy company to be keeping right here. I don't know.
He's a little hurt by not having more to compare him with, and also Tale of Sand didn't have crazy coloring.
Yeah, so, I don't think that matters so much. I mean, Habibi's in black and white, and I imagine Craig Thompson.
Well, right there,
in the top three.
We're comparing that to Craig Thompson with
that's tough. I think Ramon Perez can come off.
Yeah,
I mean, all these people are so good, it almost makes no sense to take any of them off. But we do want to get our top three. Jerome Pena, I would like to leave on for right now. I feel like when Uncanny X-Force started up, it was like a revelation. His stuff was just like...
My one counterpoint is that I think besides his art being amazing, a huge advantage is the coloring on Uncanny X-Force.
But you know, you work towards what the final product is going to be.
I understand. I'm just saying that he gets an extra bonus from awesome coloring.
Yeah. But it's not like he draws it not knowing what the final product is going to look like. You know?
Right.
But it's like Steve McNiven's art benefits a lot from coloring, but he's still a really good artist. Craig Thompson, I don't think we can take off. Habibi is just art in that is too good.
Yeah.
R.M. Guerra,
He's just my personal.
Yeah, he barely made it on. Nick fought pretty hard to keep him on here. Yeah. He was one of his vetoes. We had like 40 artists.
He's drawn almost every issue of Scalped, and he's great. People always look real.
He's pulled off some amazing.
They always look
stuff
like real people, and I don't know. He's good at showing emotion in faces and stuff.
Which is a rare thing in most comics.
J.H. Williams III. Ooh. I know Jared doesn't want to take this off. I don't think it's his best year, to be honest.
Yeah, you said that. I don't know if I agree.
And I think Batwoman's good, but I mean, it wasn't even good enough to make it into our top 10 best new series. So.
No, but see, that's looking at a series, not looking at the best
series. That's true. I just don't think...
Compared to some of these others,
it's going to be tough.
I'm not buying that argument. Leave him on there. What else we got on there?
Tradmore came off. I think Travel Foreman can come off, unfortunately. I love his art on Animal Man, and it gives it a lot of its personality, but...
This is some of the best art.
Yeah,
he just can't keep the company of some of these other people. Yeah. This is a tough category.
So what are we down to now?
Well, hold on. Frank Avila.
Oh, man. Oh, God.
His covers are so good.
They're so good. Yeah. But
if we're taking his covers into account, then definitely...
Like
his sequential stuff is not mind-blowing, though.
Yeah, it's awesome. Good.
It is really good.
But maybe not as great as some of these other guys.
Yeah, we could take him off.
Okay, so I think...
He's our best cover artist of the
definitely.
Year.
Definitely.
Okay, so we haven't whittled this down that much. We're down to Marcos Martin, Jerome Pena, Craig Thompson, J.H. Williams, and Nate Simpson.
God.
Oof. Well, that's four. Five. Or five. That's five? Oh, man.
That's five. I'm still going to say I don't think J.H. Williams belongs on this list this year, just because it's not... I don't see J.H. Williams' stuff and... I'm not as blown away by it as I used to be.
Yeah.
I can see that.
I don't know.
I feel it's starting to look a little samey, and I just...
But it also might be more people are influenced by him. Like, Francis Manapul is pulling, like, crazier layouts and stuff on Flash.
Yeah.
And I think that's a Williams influence, but...
But I also feel like the Kathy Kane stuff he does in Batwoman is not that awesome. Like, I really love the painted stuff, but I don't know. I don't think he's going to cut it against a couple of these other
people. The weird thing is I don't really like his... I love his art. I don't... And I like his layouts and stuff. I don't know if I like his storytelling as much.
Well, we're not like has layout of us like how he tells a comic story across a page or his writing.
No, like his telling it through the art.
Okay.
Sometimes I can't tell what's happening. Like I'm like, did that guy just punch somebody or
he's going for some very awesome look, but maybe not a good storytelling.
Yeah.
I don't think his Batwoman art is nearly as good as Desolation Jones.
Yeah.
I think it's a little more style over like not substance, but like I don't know. It's got clarity. Great style, but there's no, like, the storytelling's a little lacking.
Suffering for it, yeah.
All right, and then, good point. I think Nick and I are both vetoing
J.H. I'm not
Williams.
Vetoing, I just said leave him on there. If you want to take him off.
Well, we got to get it down.
Yeah, so. We got to whittle this down.
Well, all right, so take him off. What have we got left?
Marcos Martin, Jerome Pena, Craig Thompson, Nate Simpson.
Okay, I'll take him off for those four guys.
That's the thing. So, I feel like Jerome Pena might be the guy to come off this list.
That's my vote.
It's either him or Nate Simpson.
I would take Nate Simpson off.
I don't want
only because Nate Simpson spent 5 years drawing this issue.
So
I feel like if Jerome Pena spent 5 years drawing one issue, it would be.
But that's not
what incredible thing.
But that's not what happened.
Yes,
you're judging it on final product, not like you know how long it takes somebody to do something.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like a best artist of the year needs to actually have some work behind him, not just like 20 pages that he took him 5 years to draw.
I don't think that's true.
I don't know. Craig Thompson had 5 years and he did 650 pages.
That's true.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
I don't want to take Marcos Martin off.
I'm definitely putting Marcos Martin.
All right, Marcos Martin and Craig Thompson are both in.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's between Jerome Pena and Nate Simpson.
Oof. I mean, I think Jerome Pena definitely is the best work he's ever done, and it was such a revelation to have an awesomely drawn X-Men book.
It's so executed.
Yeah.
It's everything about it. The storytelling in it is better than any.
Oh, wow. If you're going with a storytelling route, because like...
Well, that's part of the art when it's comic art.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. There's like a clarity to Nate Simpson's style, but like... I mean, that's what his style is. It's very clear. It's very easy to follow stuff, but like for the amount of chaos going on in Uncanny X-Force, Opeña really pulls that off.
It's crazy how
you know, we did pull James Stokoe off this list because he only put out one issue of Workstain this year. It's true.
There's something to be said about the fact that Jerome Opeña probably did like 10 issues of Uncanny X-Force this
year. Can we do this? I mean, this is a little bit of cheating, okay?
We're all about cheating.
Let's do our top three as Marcos Martin, Jerome Pena, and Craig Thompson.
Yep.
And let's give Nate Simpson an honorary award for Best New Artist.
Yeah. And Frank Avila, we're giving him an honorary award for Best Cover Artist.
Best Cover Artist. All right, so that's good. So right, we got three. Then Marcos Martin, Jerome Pena, and Craig Thompson. I love Marcos Martin. I got to go with Craig Thompson on this one.
Oh. Yeah.
Habibi is...
Thompson does...
All about...
It's not even... comic art, it's illustration, it's just
and comic art.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but it's the like, things he does with like showing letters and then making pictures that use the letters as layouts and things and all that intricate like lattice work stuff, I just don't
and
think
calligraphy
it's insane. Like,
yeah, it's insane. I mean, are we going with Craig Thompson then? Yeah.
We have to.
I mean, it's 650 pages of comic art.
Yeah, and it's amazing. In Craig Thompson page. Is the winner. I held down that button too long again. All right, so our top three were Marcos Martin, Jerome Pena, and Craig Thompson. Would Craig Thompson take
all
it home?
All three amazing.
Three amazing. This was definitely a tough category this year. Yeah. It was a good year for comic art.
Yeah.
All right, so next up we've got Best Miniseries.
All right.
And what do we got on this list? We got Axe Cop 2, Bad Guy Earth, Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes, Criminal, The Last of the Innocent, Key of Z, The Rinse, Severed, Spaceman, Strange Talent of Luther Strode, that should say. And Who is Jake Ellis and Witch Doctor?
Wow.
Yes, yeah, it's a strong year for miniseries.
Yeah, it helps that that's such a broad range of styles and genres and everything.
I did want to mention right off the bat that Fear Itself and Flashpoint did not make it into our best miniseries list this year.
Yep.
They were entertaining, but not as good as these.
Yeah, I think so. Fear Itself started off really slow and finished strong. And then Flashpoint was
a bit of a mess
and just kind of another excuse to
reboot your entire universe.
There's actually not a single superhero thing on here, I think.
Yeah, I think we could have put Flashpoint Batman on here.
Yeah, ooh, that's a good
point. But I don't think it would have made our top three, so I'm not too worried about leaving it off at this point.
Yeah.
All right, so let's start off with Axe Cop 2, Bad Guy Earth.
So Axe Cop is, for the people who have not heard us rant about it a million times, drawn by some guy who's in his 30s, but he has a much younger brother who's 6 years old, who they basically go out and play just whatever silly games you want to play when you're 6 years old.
Axe Cop.
And then he writes down all their adventures and asks him questions about it. And so basically the younger brother writes the story through their playtime, and then he does an awesome comic about it where Axe Cop goes around, chops people's heads off with an axe, and there's dinosaurs with machine guns for arms, and they fly to the moon, and there's vampires, and it's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, and you end up with crazy stream of consciousness, like, just craziness.
Yeah. Meanwhile, some chicken's brains came out and grew robotic arms.
Yes.
All right, so good. Next up is something that is maybe surprising that's on here, is Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes.
It sounds surprising, but there's good reason for it.
Yeah.
It's actually the best Planet of the Apes comic that came out this year, even though there's two of them.
and they're both actually really good.
Yeah.
I mean, is this one also written by Daryl Gregory?
Oh, God, I can't remember.
The art's by Gabriel Hardman, though.
Yeah, the art is so
I think Hardman
good.
Co-wrote it with the other guy.
And it's a very cool kind of political Planet of the Apes comic, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Next up, we have Criminal, Last of the Innocent. Probably whatever every year we do this, there's going to be a Criminal miniseries on here.
Yeah.
And this is just another really good one by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, who did Fatale that we talked about in the last podcast.
But yeah, like the thing about this one that's the awesome twist on it is it's very much a guy who's kind of settled into the terrible midlife thing and has become rich and famous. It's basically if Archie grew up and married Veronica and he turned into a cynical evil dude, and then he goes back to the little town he grew up in and meets a girl who's very much like a sweet Betty type girl and realizes he made the wrong choice in life, and his solution to this is to murder his wife and frame his best friend for it.
And it's all like all the flashbacks are drawn Archie style, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's a brilliant combo of crime and comics.
And then next we've got Key of Z.
Key of Z is one of my favorite here. It's the first issue was pretty good. It's a little bit of a Walking Dead mixed with like the Warriors.
Yeah,
it's like true. Like zombies have taken over the world, and people have control of different stadiums in the city, and they've kind of become almost like warlords. And there's a guy who can kind of control zombies through musical tones, and he is getting revenge on all of these people that control the city because they did something really, really terrible.
And then we've got The Rinse.
The Rinse is another crime series. Crimes have kind of taken off this year in a crazy way. This one's Gary Phillips, I wrote this one. It's basically set in San Francisco, and the rents refers to laundering dirty money to get it back into a legal economy. And it's just one of those crossovers where, like, you know, everybody's double-crossing each other, and there's plot within plot, and the money launderer is trying to get out from with everything, and everyone's out to get him. It's awesome.
And then we've got Severed.
Oh, Severed is Scott Snyder's kind of it's his take on kind of the Great Depression era, and kind of people jumping trains and stuff like that. It's basically, the main story is this guy's telling his kids this story about how when he was young, he tried to find his real father by jumping trains, and he meets this crazy old man that basically has been eating children for a while.
Oh, God.
It's very creepy. The art is great, and even the coloring is very good. It fits the time period.
It's got kind of a sepia tone.
Yeah, it fits the kind of Depression era tone of it. It's awesome. Yeah.
And then we've got Spaceman, which is the new miniseries by Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Risso, the guys that did 100 Bullets. And it's about like a future where celebrity culture is taken over and a good chunk of the world is flooded. And it's about this guy called the Spaceman who was bred to be part of like a space program.
Mars mission, basically.
Yeah. And but now is just like a down on his luck junk fisherman who gets wrapped up in this celebrity kidnapping thing. And it's very, very good. And then we got Strange Town of Luther Strode.
This is another one that came out of nowhere. These two new guys started. It's basically like a riff off of those old Atlas commercials of, like, you know, get beat up by the bully at the beach, take the Atlas program, become super strong. And so this Luther Strode kid does that and, in fact, suddenly becomes immensely powerful. And it's the idea of, like, if you could suddenly have the strength to get revenge on your bullies, would you, you know, be a better person or then become a very violent, crazy bully yourself?
And then we've got Who is Jake Ellis by Nathan Edmondson. And God, I can't remember the artist on this, but
Tonjic. Oh, God, what is it?
He's Croatian or Serbian. It's one of those unpronounceable Balkan names.
But Who is Jake Ellis is a kind of a thriller series about a guy who's on the run from seemingly the government. I don't want to give too much away about it, I guess, or it doesn't matter at this point. But he has this guy named Jake Ellis that's inside of his head that kind of tells him what to do. And like how, you know, there are guys around this corner and stuff. And most of what the comic is about is finding out like how Jake Ellis is in his head. What is the relation? Is this guy just crazy or is there really some kind of conspiracy going on?
It's got a very satisfying payoff.
And it's very much like the Bourne Identity in style.
And then we've got Witch Doctor.
Witch Doctor, we talked about a little bit in our last podcast again. And we've talked about it a few times, but it's basically like House meets Exorcist and it's got awesome. It's kind of building its own little world too, where he's got the sword of Excalibur, and that there's a prophecy that he's going to save the world in the future. But he's just a really crazy recluse.
Yeah, with a great cast of characters and really interesting art, and it's a cool series. Yeah.
Great medical cases.
All right, so we got to get this down to three again.
Ooh.
So right up front, we've got some problems here. Some of these series have not finished yet.
Which I think is okay.
So, yeah, for most of them.
Sometimes it's tough.
I'm just saying it may be a disadvantage if you don't know if it's going to have a terrible ending, because some series just don't end very well.
But one of those series is Spaceman, and I kind of don't want to pull Spaceman off.
I'm just saying. List. I didn't say take it off. I'm just saying it might be a disadvantage.
I know Nick loves it, but I'm going to say Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes probably isn't going to make it into the top three on here.
Yeah, probably not. It's amazing.
Probably not. Definitely not.
It's so good. Yeah, but
compared to the rest of these, no.
Yeah,
it's not the top.
It's got
three.
Some tough competition.
Yeah, all do.
The same with potentially criminal. Well, I don't know.
No, criminal. I'm going to leave on there. What was
between criminal and the rents?
The rents. Yeah, the rents was great, but not. Like, yeah, I think as the rents. The criminal.
Yeah, I think rents can come off. I think Axe Cop, unfortunately, I think might come off as well.
Well. I would like to leave that on until we look at the rest of them.
Okay. Key of Z, Nick will argue that for a long time, but I don't think Jared and I are going to let that get into the top three, to be honest.
What do you say, Nick? Defend. Yeah, I mean, rebuttal.
That's fine. I'd put it in my top five, but I don't know if I'd put it in my top three. Okay, I love it, though.
There you go. Severed, let's leave that on there for now.
Ooh, yeah, so good.
I say let's leave Spaceman on there for now, and Strange Challenge Luther Strode, and Who is Jake Ellis, and Witch Doctor.
Wow. Well, first of all... Who is Jake Ellis? will probably make it into the top.
I'm pretty sure Who Is Jake Ellis is going to make it into the top three.
I would
here.
Take Witch Doctor off, actually.
Really?
Like, ooh,
that's a tough one.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, comparing it to all the rest of these, again, it's like top five, but maybe not top three. Like,
okay, Spaceman didn't. I think you're right. Because it's so early, I don't think it's going to make it into the top three. It's nine issues, and it's only three issues in. It's really hard to judge. It could be end up being terrible. That's not going to happen.
Yeah,
no.
I'm pretty sure. And honestly, I'm going to say the same thing for Strange Town and Luther Strode.
Yeah.
I think it hurts Strange Town and Luther Strode a little bit more because they're such unknown quantities.
Yeah.
Like, we know that Eduardo Risso can draw amazing art for as long as he wants to, and that Brian Azzarello can pull off a great ending to a series with him. So that helps a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And we don't know where Strange Town and Luther Strode is going. There's a lot of mystery in the story, so we don't know if there's going to be a good payoff.
All right, I'm thinking Who Is Jake Ellis is making it in. I think we've all kind of agreed on that. I think Criminal will make it in because of the kind of different storytelling in this one. I think it's pretty interesting. I mean, what do you think, Nick?
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
All right, those two are potentials. What else is on the list of potentials right now? What are
Axe Cop.
Oh, yeah.
Strange Talent Luther Strode and Witch Doctor.
Well, Strange Talent Luther Strode we're going to cut just because we don't know.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And Witch Doctor... Oh, God, it's so good. But I feel like Witch Doctor is an ongoing series that's kind of forced to be in a miniseries format.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God, Witch Doctor was so
good. Because there's definitely like a good build-up of like...
Did you feel like that at the end of Witch Doctor? Like, I didn't get a complete story?
Yeah, definitely. It ends on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, it does.
It's like, we were doing all this, but then these guys were behind it. And you don't know who they are or what's happening. So it feels like it's a series of mini... It's like Hellboy, where it's kind of a series of miniseries as opposed to like...
It's not as bad as Hellboy.
It's more of an ongoing, I don't know.
Well, I think that cuts us down to three then. With Axe Cop, Criminal, and Who Is Jake Ellis? Oh, Severed.
Oh, yeah, Severed. Yeah. I was like, that can't be right. Okay. Now this sounds more accurate with those four.
Severed's still not done either. But...
Tough. Then it's like, why did we put them on the list? But
because some of them are, like, we should...
They're worth mentioning.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like Severed's going to be amazing throughout. I mean, it's so incredible every issue. But yeah, God. Same thing with Luther Strode, though. So.
Yeah, so we should relook at what we just took off because they're not finished.
Because,
like, honestly, you know, you might want to throw Spaceman back on there. You know, it's... They're...
For me, looking at this list, for me, the list is Who Is Jake Ellis, Spaceman, and Criminal.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, I love Axe Cop, but I actually didn't think that the Axe Cop miniseries was as good as the webcomic stuff.
Yeah, I could see that.
It just didn't have the same impact for me. I mean, it's still great, and it's still fun, and it's still something I would recommend to almost anybody.
You'd say maybe your top 10.
Yeah, I would definitely make it into my top 10 best miniseries of 2011.
Like, it didn't have the punch of the first Axe Cop just because you knew a little bit what to expect from it, that it was just going to be bananas.
But I love Witch Doctor too. But I know I know that's not making it in, so that's fine. We can leave Witch Doctor off. So, Who is Jake Ellis?
Spaceman,
Criminal, and then
Severed. Are we taking Severed off?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we need to decide though.
Yeah.
So that's my top three: Who is Jake Ellis, Spaceman, and Criminal. Nick, what do you got?
Who is Jake Ellis, Spaceman, and Severed,
and then Jared.
I think I know where this is going.
I think I think Criminal's staying on and Severed is not.
Criminal, Who Is Jake Ellis,
and Spaceman.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then that's it. It's Criminal, Who Is Jake Ellis, and Spaceman are our top three. And I think we all know what our number one is because it made it on all our lists. It's Who Is Jake Ellis.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Criminal was really good.
Criminal's astounding, but like... Who's Jake Ellis? Who Is Jake Ellis is like a little more perfect in what it was trying to do. It just did it so well.
It has such a great payoff.
Like, yeah, it's true.
It does. All right, so Who Is Jake Ellis is the winner?
Yeah.
Woohoo!
All right, so moving on to... Oh, I should say that was Criminal, Spaceman, and Who Is Jake Ellis, with Jake Ellis winning.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, moving on to the Best Kids category.
All right.
Best Kids?
Best Kids.
Power Pack.
Everybody's
going to say their own kids.
No, yeah. Franklin Richards.
All right.
No, in comics. If your kids aren't in comics, you're cheating.
None of us have kids.
All right. So this is Best Kids comic. Should we put Donald Duck on this list?
Donald Duck's not on that list.
It's not.
I would like to redo this list.
So all right. What gets pulled off? Let's go through this.
Read the 10 and we might change one out.
Amulet 4, Anya's Ghost, Bad Island, Princeless, Rust, Sidekicks, Snarked, Super Dinosaur, Three Thieves, and Zeta the Space Girl. I'm going to say we should take off Zeta and put Donald Duck in.
Yeah. Agreed. I didn't even read Zeta, so.
See, that's the thing. I unfortunately have been around two young kids who love Zeta. So I would almost go Snarked is, while appropriate for kids, there are a lot of comics that are good for kids, will be less enjoyed by kids than Donald Duck.
I'd pull off Ross before Snarked.
Okay. That I might go with that more.
We didn't put Donald Duck on this list, though, so...
Slap Donald Duck on as honorary number 11, and we'll look at the whole list.
Okay, let's do that. So, okay. Amulet.
All right, so Amulet is... this will suffer a little bit because it's book four in an ongoing series, but it's this amazing one by Kibuishi. Yeah. Very much, you know, kids and their mom find a magical realm that they then get lost into, and it's just like maniacal, over-the-top fantasy adventure with giant walking houses and elves and magic and awesomeness.
Yeah, like Phantom Tollbooth times Courtney Crumrin.
Yeah, this is definitely
awesome. Yeah.
This is the thing we suggest to kids after they read Bone.
Yes. Yep, exactly. Then Anya's Ghost.
Anya's Ghost, it's about this girl who falls into a, is it a well, right?
Yep.
And she finds a skeleton down there, and then the ghost of the skeleton appears and starts bugging her, basically. And starts getting increasingly more aggressive and starts... And it's also about the Anya's kind of struggles with her family, who are just like Russian immigrants, and how it is to be a Russian immigrant. It's cool. It's
a
really
good combo
mixture
of those two stories, yeah.
And then next up, we've got Bad Island by Doug Ten Naple, who has done lots of really, really good comics, but I think that this is his best.
I agree with that.
And it's basically a family drama comedy about a vacation to an island that goes crazily wrong and has lots of cool mystical stuff and action adventure. It's basically
cosmic
like,
stuff.
It's yeah, like cosmic if stuff. Lost, the TV show was National Lampoon's The Lost.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
With our family.
Yeah. And then next up, we've got Princeless.
So Princeless is another one. It's a miniseries we haven't seen the end of yet, but it's just a beautiful, awesome twist on the head of the typical princess stuck in the tower thing, where a young, rebellious, very feminist, informed young girl princess refuses to be part of this crazy shenanigans and is literally slipped a sleeping potion by her parents to be locked up in a tower until her prince can show up, until she finally realizes that this is not going to work and decides to bust out on her own and rescue all of her sisters who are likewise locked up.
A very fun like twist on the Disney princess. Very good. The guys over at Action Lab did an awesome job on this book.
Yep.
And then Rust 1, Victor in the Field.
Rust is awesome. I definitely recommend it for people who like Iron Giants.
Definitely.
If you read that, it's like basically this family lives on a farm, and this kind of rope. Well, this boy shows up, and they're not sure what he is, and they slowly find out that he's maybe not human. He's got some crazy mechanical abilities, and then these other massive robots show up trying to kill him. And the family kind of gets wrapped up in this drama, and it's great.
But a lot of it's like action fighting giant robots.
Yeah, it takes place like after like a crazy robot human war. Yeah, it's awesome.
And then we've got Sidekicks, which was an original graphic novel. It's kind of the idea of like, what do animal sidekicks of superheroes get up to when their superheroes aren't paying attention to them? And it was a lot of fun. It was very much in the vein of like something like The Incredibles.
Yeah.
It had a very, it's got that family dynamic that Pixar movies tend to have.
Yeah.
But with a little bit of twist on it because it's like superhero animals. And it was very cool.
It's also like pets who are not necessarily super powered who want to be superheroes.
Yeah. It was great. And then we've got Snarked by Roger Langridge.
So this is basically Roger Langridge being inspired by all the Lewis Carroll, like crazy, you know, Jabberwocky and like Walrus and the Carpenter stories. Where he creates an entire fantasy realm where the walrus and these stupid sidekick, who's kind of a carpenter, get involved with a plot to overthrow the king and the little princess who's off on her own trying to get help.
And it's hilarious.
Yes.
And then we've got Super Dinosaur by Robert Kirkman.
Oh, my God. Super Dinosaur. If I was a kid, I would be reading this and begging them to make toys of this.
Yeah.
It's very much inspired by like kind of 80s cartoons like He-Man and G.I. Joe, where it's like, basically, it's about a little kid and his friend who is a dinosaur who has a jetpack and machine guns and missiles, and they fight other dinosaur human hybrids and mad scientists, and they fight squid people and like crazy things. And it's mostly about the family dynamic between him and his dad and this other family that's moved in to help them. and it's got good little mysteries building, and it's just so fun. Like, every issue is something crazy happening.
Yeah, it's very Kirkman-esque in that, like, there's always a twist around the corner, and it's a lot of fun to read. But yeah, it's also a lot like something like Ben 10 or Generator Rex, where it's just like awesome kids action as well. And then we've got Three Thieves.
So Three Thieves is another one. They actually did two books of this year. It's a new ongoing series of graphic novels where it's a young girl who is orphaned at a very young age, like a lot of the heroines and heroes are, and takes up with a group of circus creatures in a fantasy world. So she ends up with like the smart little monster and the big dumb monster, and the three of them decide to become thieves in order to steal evidence about who killed her family and like basically end up breaking into the castle.
And it's by Scott Chandler, right?
The guy
that does Two Generals and other awesome stuff. Yeah. And then we've got Zeta the Space Girl.
So this one is basically another one in the style of like a girl who gets into trouble, where she basically is hanging out with her friend and presses a strange button, which disappears her friend. And then she finds out that he's been zapped off to another planet, and she has to gather like a group of people to help her out through just being, you know, a good person. So she's got like a robot and a monster and aliens, and like they all team up and work together to try and find her friend.
And then we're cheating and putting Donald Duck Lost in the Andes in here, which we've already talked about at great length. So let's go through this list and decide what stays on here. This is going to be a tough one because there's a lot of good comics. Yeah. Amulet 4, I feel like we need to leave on for right now.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to see as we go down this list that maybe it's not
going
to make it in
the top 3. It's got a disadvantage because it's been going on for
and
so
it's,
long.
Yeah, it's definitely not the best of the series.
Yeah, I think that's true.
It's really good. It's amazing.
Volume 2 was really good. And 1. And they're all
and
good.
3.
And 4.
Yep.
Anya's Ghost. I only read a little bit, so I can't really speak to whether or not I really feel like it should be on here or not.
It's so good.
Yeah. Leave it. Keep going. We're going to find some weaker ones.
Yeah. Bad Island, I want to leave on here.
Oh, no. So good.
For sure. Princeless, we love Princeless and we love those guys, but we've only read one
Again,
issue of it so far.
The disadvantage, it hasn't finished up yet.
Yeah. Rust. Here's the thing. I love Rust, but it's so melancholy that I just don't know how much kids will really like it.
Yeah. Again, I think it's the thing of like an all ages comic that's not necessarily going to be enjoyed by kids.
It's one of the only things on the list that's already being made into a movie, dude.
That's true. But so Rust gets cut, we think.
Yeah, it's a little serious.
This is a good list, so it's kind of tough.
Yeah.
Sidekicks, I liked, but I think that's got to get cut compared to some of this other stuff. It was a lot of fun.
Really fun, but perhaps not as weighty as some of the others in terms of. Awesome. I don't know. It's awesome, but yeah.
Snarked is another one where it's just, it's not, it's a kid's comic, but kids don't care about Snarked.
No. Yeah, it's not.
Super Dinosaur, I certainly want to leave on here.
Yeah.
Three Thieves.
Again, it's great, but yeah, I think it's
not as good as some of these other ones.
Lose out to some of the other ones. Yeah.
And then I think Zeta doesn't make it in the top three just because Nick and I, neither of us have read it. So,
well, there you go.
Yeah, that's not going to make it. And then Donald Duck.
It's got to stay.
It's got to. That one's got to stay. So, all right, here's what we got then. We've got Amulet, Bad Island, Super Dinosaur, and Donald Duck. That's only 4.
Really?
Yeah.
Look over that list.
We cut Anya's Ghost.
Oh, no, we didn't cut Anya's Ghost, did we?
Oh, no, we cut Amulet, didn't we?
No.
Okay, so we've got Amulet. Okay, we got Amulet, Anya's Ghost, Bad Island, Super Dinosaur, and Donald Duck.
Yeah.
So that's 5.
I say left something off. We take Amulet off just because.
Yeah, I think we take Amulet off.
It's not
off.
The best of the series, and it's kind of in the mid. It's kind of like the lull in the story, but it's still awesome. But I would definitely, as a whole, I would recommend the series, but this isn't the best volume.
I'm going to say out of those, Anya's Ghost is the other one that comes off.
All right, read off four again. So Anya's Ghost,
Bad Island, Super Dinosaur, and Donald Duck.
Yeah.
God, I like Anya's Ghost a lot more than Bad Island.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. I really like Bad Island, but Anya's Ghost had like more of. God, I don't know, something.
Well, no, I see your point, because, like, Bad Island is, like, a maniacal adventure, but, like, Anya's Ghost had more, like...
There's good character stuff in it. Like,
there's good character stuff in Bad Island, too.
Yeah, well, there is.
Yeah, you just said you hadn't finished reading Anya's Ghost.
I haven't.
Yeah, so...
So, for me, that one's not going to cut it.
Oh, man, but, oh, the coloring was so good on Bad Island.
I Super Dinosaur and Donald Duck, I think, are concrete in the top 3 here.
Solid, yeah.
And then, I mean, if you guys both pick Anya's Ghost over Bad Island, that's all there is to it.
I don't know if I can.
I loved Bad Island.
I loved it too. Really good.
I think the thing there is like I really like Anya's Ghost was awesome, but I love Bad Island. You know what I mean? Like the difference between like Bad Island was more fun for one.
Yeah,
but that doesn't mean it's better. So I'm not really helping here.
Yeah, I guess if I was a kid, I'd probably pick Bad Island.
And
that,
I think
that
I
might
think,
be again the argument. Yeah,
and you did. I mean, you loved both of those books.
Yeah. As a kid, I would pick Bat Island. As an adult, I would pick Anya's Ghost.
I can see that.
So we're going with Bat Island.
Are we, Nick? You okay with that?
That's fine.
Okay. So
he's conceding for now.
So we got our top three. It's Bat Island, Super Dinosaur, and Donald Duck.
Oh.
So here's the thing. We put Donald Duck on this list because I was like, I can't believe we didn't pick Donald Duck for best reprint.
That's true.
But I think I'm going to go with Super Dinosaur.
I think I'm going to go with Super Dinosaur as well.
Well, I don't know.
The thing is, like,
I really don't know.
If I was a kid, I would love Super Dinosaur. I would like Donald Duck. I'd be like, it's cool. It's Donald Duck, whatever. But then I was like, this dinosaur's got machine guns.
And I think all the things that work about Donald Duck so well are things that you appreciate
more as an adult.
Yeah.
Like, you just absorb it and be like, that was fun, but you're not realizing how awesome it is. But my one thing about Bat Island versus Super Dinosaur is awesome for boys. It's got some good girls in it, but you've got dinosaurs with, like, robot suits
awesome,
and rocket packs.
Awesome for girls.
Right. But Bat Island has a much better girl character in it. It's a whole family. And
well,
like,
this one has two girl characters, and
they're not nearly as
one
awesome.
Of them is actually becoming his partner. She has her own robot.
Finally, for a long time, they're sitting around complaining while their parents do stuff.
No, but they're like very integral to the plot. Like the one girl actually ends up kind of betraying everybody.
That's true.
And then the one girl is like actually trying to help them. And
yeah, but do you want to be a girl reading comic about the girl who betrays everybody? I'm just saying, Bat Island's got a better girl character.
Yeah, but it's also mostly just monsters, which is more of a boy thing.
That's true too.
I don't know.
It's also the thing is.
See, that's the one thing it's about Anya's Ghost written by a woman. So
I guess I want to say it's like, well, which one is your favorite, you know, like without taking that stuff into consideration. But that's what we're doing, is taking that stuff into consideration. So I'm going to go with Super Dinosaur. It's funny that out of those three, Donald Duck is the one that's not making it into the conversation.
All right.
I think we should have a separate, like, I feel like Donald Duck is like the
time.
Best comic of all time.
Yeah.
Let's give an honorary best comic of all time award to Donald Duck. And then give a Super Dinosaur best kids comic. I think, are you saying Super Dinosaur,
I'm
Nick?
Saying
I'm saying Super Dinosaur.
Yeah.
So
I'll go with it. Yeah. Okay.
It's definitely the one that more kids have read this year that have liked a lot.
That's true.
Like, we've got a lot of kids coming
so
in to buy Super
fun.
Dinosaur.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
It's
like, no kids come in and be like, is Bat Island here?
Like, that's definitely true.
But like, a lot of kids are like, Super Dinosaur. Yeah. And Super Dinosaur had a coloring book too. You got to take that into account.
That's true.
You got to take that into account. But Anya's Ghost is black and white, right? So you can just color the whole thing.
You could.
That's true.
All right. So our top three were Bat Island, Super Dinosaur, and Donald Duck Lost in the Andes. And Super Dinosaur took the cake.
Take the cake.
Woo!
All right, so moving on to best single issue, which was an
interesting
one.
Yeah.
It was hard to not just like be a bunch of number ones.
This will be the most spoilery of the talks.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's definitely true. So what we've got here is Bowman number one, Daredevil number seven, Fantastic Four 600, Ganges 4, Optic Nerve 12, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man 1, Uncanny X-Force 18, Who is Jake Ellis 1, Boys 59, and Non-Player 1.
So Bowman, is that the first one?
Yeah,
there?
Bowman.
All right, so this is one of the retrofit mini little comics they've started doing this year, and this one was just hitting it for the pure insanity that you can pump out when you're just doing comics just for super, I don't know, because you're crazy and love comics. So it's basically like at the end of 2001, A Space Odyssey, the movie and or book, when, God, what's his name? David Bowman?
I can't remember. Whatever. His name's Bowman.
Astronaut Bowman goes floating off into the monolith and crazy psychedelic stuff happens.
He meets Bart Simpson.
Yes. And so it shows you that he meets Bart Simpson and flashes back to his really bizarre childhood and then continue an adventure by crash landing on an alien planet where he hangs out with aliens.
It's really messed up.
Yeah.
And then next we've got Daredevil 7.
Daredevil 7 is awesome. This is the issue where he's taking a bunch of kids on a field trip and they... Blind children on a field trip and they crash and they end up stuck in the snow trying to find their way to safety. It's a great done-in-one story, and I don't know. It's great.
And then we've got Fantastic Four 600.
Well, this was the crazy, maybe too soon return of Johnny Storm.
Yeah.
But the thing that made this...
Just three issues later, if you're going by the Fantastic
Four
number.
I mean, this thing was like, how many? Like 100 pages of a new story?
Yep.
The main story was... epic and deserved to be an event in and of itself. It's a huge story. with the Kree invading Earth. And then there's a one of the backup stories, which is even longer than the main story, which is about Johnny Storm in the negative zone, being killed and revived over and over again by Annihilus until he finally takes over the place and puts Annihilus on a chain. And
one thing that I just thought of when we were talking about Fantastic Four 600 and it making this on this list, and Nick was saying, well, what about, you know, 597, which is the
wasn't it 587?
Was it five? Oh yeah, sorry, yeah, yeah, you're right. So 587.
A year later, yeah.
But then I just thought, actually, Fantastic Four 588, which was the All Silent issue drawn by Nick Dragotta, that was about everybody figuring out, and then that also had the backup where like Spider-Man is explaining to Franklin Richards how he also lost an uncle when he was a young kid.
God, yeah.
That's a really good issue.
Yeah, but this issue is.
That's true. I just wanted to mention that.
This one also has the Feral Darwhople thing.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. No, this is great. I just wanted to mention that because that was a really, also really good issue.
Yeah.
And then we've got Ganges 4, which is the fourth of Kevin Huizenga's ongoing series about Glenn Ganges and his permanent insomnia. Yes. And
still haven't read it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Which means it probably won't make the top three, but that's okay. But it's definitely deserves to be on here.
Ruminations on life and everything.
Yeah, and the stuff Huizenga does with the comics page and the way he tells stories is just so idiosyncratic and amazing. And then we've got Optic Nerve number 12 by Adrian Tomine. This was split into two stories. The first was my favorite. It was drawn in a more like almost like Gasoline Alley, Sammy Harkham style. And it's about this guy that makes this horticulture art and just sort of all the pitfalls he goes through trying to convince people that he's like an amazing artist. And it's it's really funny and has a totally different tone than the other Optic Nerve stuff. And then a backup story about a girl who's mistaken for a porn star all the time.
Yeah.
That is very much more of a traditional Optic Nerve story and might be the reason this doesn't make it into the top three, but we'll get to that later. And then we've got Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 1.
This was like we mentioned this earlier in the thing. It's just like, this is the relaunch of a new Spider-Man, a young kid with different powers. But the main thing that I think puts it over here is it's just such excellent characterization, and he's just such a great character to watch.
It's a very perfect introduction issue.
Yeah,
you know everything you need to know about him in this issue.
And people complain that it made the series get off to a slow start, but I think it makes everything else pay off a lot more as it goes on. And then we've got Uncanny X-Force number 18, which is the end of the Dark Angel saga. This is by Rick Remender and Jerome Pena. Basically, it is the most epic finish to the most epic storyline in comics this year.
Yeah.
And
certainly in X-Men in a long
time. It hit every note. It was like, that's awesome. Oh, that's really sad. That's awesome. That's really sad. Like everything.
Yeah, it's such a high drama. Like it's
action packed, but a lot of character stuff
with beautiful art and just so much payoff for a storyline that had been going on for a long time. And it's really great stuff. And then we've got, who is Jake Ellis number 1?
Oh God,
we talked about this.
No, we love it so much. But yeah, it's just a perfect start off to a thriller where it throws just enough information at you to get you hooked and just has amazing art and pulls off some really interesting tricks with layout and stuff.
Yeah, I mean the whole series was great, but this first issue was a big chunk of the reason why it was our best miniseries of the year. And then we've got Boys number 59.
Boys number 59 was one of my personal favorites. People have kind of fallen off the Boys bandwagon, but this I've kept with it, and this is a great turning point in the series where I'm going to spoil a lot of it. But,
yeah, go ahead.
Butcher's, what's the name of his dog? I forget. A killer or something like that.
Carnage or something.
Oh, God. Yeah. Is this Carnage?
No, it's not Carnage.
It's something like that.
Something like
that. I can't remember, but go ahead. Yeah.
His dog gets killed by one of the superheroes, and he basically
loses it.
Yeah. All he says is, like, he keeps repeating, like, why'd you kill my dog? Why'd you kill my dog? As he's stabbing the hero to death with the knife.
Yeah.
It's pretty brutal, but it's
a culmination of a long character.
Yeah, and it's like a huge turning point where, like, everything is going to start getting crazy right now.
Yeah.
And then we've got non-player number 1, which we talked about a little bit earlier when we were talking about Nate Simpson for Best Artist. This is basically a comic about, like a virtual world within a virtual world and augmented reality and stuff. Basically, it's a showcase for Nate Simpson's art, and it was just a really astounding.
This suffers a little bit because not having a second issue to see where it goes, but it did have a really good setup of some very interesting stuff about you know, what is reality within a virtual reality and stuff.
Yeah, but I think it's mostly on here because of the art.
Definitely.
Yeah, but which is why I think it's probably the first thing for me that's going to get cut from this list.
Terror.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was working on that too.
But I'm going to say non-player 1 can probably come off our top three. We'll start at the beginning. Bowman number one, I don't want to pull that off just yet. It is
the bananas.
It is bananas. Yeah. Daredevil 7 I haven't read yet. I'm only on issue 6, so I can't really speak to that.
Daredevil kind of is a hard one because so many of the issues were so good. I don't know if this is the best one because there are also many others I want to say are also best. Yeah. But
this is a great kind of one show.
That's for a single issue, yeah.
But instead of judging it against the other Daredevil issues, since it's the one that ended up making it on, we got to judge it against these other comics.
Yeah, leave that on there for
now. Let's leave Fantastic Four 600 on for now.
It's so epic.
Yeah, Ganges 4 is going to come off, I think.
Yeah.
It's great, but it's not as good as Ganges 2.
Yep.
I don't think.
That one just still
does. And not as good as Ganges 3 either. Optic Nerve 12 I love, but I don't see it making the top of this list.
Yeah, I think
I didn't like it as much as
I love the first half of it, but I love the cartooning in it. I like when Tomine does more something humorous different stuff, I don't think it makes the cut, especially because I thought the second half of it was a weaker traditional Tomine story. Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number one, I think, has got to stay on here for now. Yep. Same with Uncanny X-Force 18 for me. That was the first thing I thought of when we were talking about issue of the year.
Yeah.
Who's Jake Ellis one? I can see coming off this list.
Yeah,
I can too.
Yeah.
Same with Boys 59, just because Jared and I are both not to that point.
You
of
guys
boys, maybe.
Yeah, you guys have
that one.
Okay.
No, right,
but yeah, I'm on like issue 45.
Yeah.
Okay, so that leaves us with Bowman 1, Daredevil 7, Fantastic Four 600, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, Uncanny X-Force. Oh, that's it?
So 5. So we're down half. That's not terrible.
That's a lot of Marvel books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Marvel's had a good year.
Yeah. I still want to leave Bowman on here.
Yeah.
It was so insane. And I feel like it kind of deserves a spot. I haven't read Daredevil 7, and Jared was saying he didn't think it was maybe his favorite.
No, I see the point, but yeah, I don't know.
That's over some of these other ones.
I think that's a bigger problem.
Fantastic Four 600.
I gotta leave that one on.
Okay, we're staying with that. Ultimate Spider-Man number one. Yeah. I don't know if it's Ultimate Spider-Man number one that's so good, Ultimate Spider-Man as a whole.
Yeah.
But it was such an impactful and important comic.
I remember
to come out
reading that first one being like, wow.
And there was a lot of writing on that issue. Like, it's a huge gamble to change character completely to a different person.
But then is that Ultimate Fallout number 4 that we're talking about then?
No.
Because that was where he first shows up.
But the thing is, like, it was a gamble, and then
it paid off.
This is the thing that, you know, everything was riding on. If this was bad, the whole thing would have been a disaster.
All right. And I definitely want to leave Uncanny X-Force on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that brings us to Bowman, Fantastic Four, Ultimate Spider-Man, Uncanny X-Force.
Right. Wow. Between Fantastic Four and Uncanny X-Force, they're both amazing, but I think Uncanny X-Force has all that payoff in the...
Yeah, I'm going to go...
All that payoff? Look at how epic Fantastic... It's like the same thing.
Yeah, it's definitely...
I see your point, though. There's more characters
there's just that
involved
one
in Uncanny X-Force as opposed to like a few characters in
FF. And there's that one segment in Uncanny X-Force where...
Yeah.
Rachel, what's her name? Psylocke and Angel, like, kind of see their whole life as it would have been.
Yeah. Oh my god.
As he's like dying.
All right. That. Yeah, you got me.
And honestly, Fantastic Four is great, but everybody wanted to talk about Uncanny X-Force 18 after it came out.
Yeah.
Like.
Right, but remember the backup part to FF?
Yeah, it was fun.
All of the backup,
the Farrell Dalrymple stuff. No, the whole issue is great. I mean, I could see pulling Bowman off here if you guys wanted to.
I might want to say to take Bowman off and leave FF on.
So
yeah, I mean, Bowman was great and it was funny, but it wasn't like something I'd ever read again.
It didn't blow my mind like those other
I don't really think about it on a daily basis.
So we're going to be with three, we're going to have three Marvel books.
Are we?
Might have happened.
FF 600, Ultimate Spider-Man 1. No, did we take that off?
No.
No, and Uncanny X-Force 18.
I think we are.
Wow.
That's fine. That's okay.
It's how the gods have fallen.
Yeah. I did want to mention that Love and Rockets number 4 is like probably the best thing of the year, but none of us actually read it.
Well, the point is that you have to appreciate that fully. You have to have read 30 years of Love and Rockets, which none of us have done.
Yeah. So I've read a good bit of Love and Rockets, but certainly.
Sorry, everyone.
Yeah.
Jim Dugan.
Yep. I know people aren't going to be too happy about that. So, all right. FF, Uncanny X-Force, and who is Jake Ellis?
That's funny.
Wait, no. Oh, sorry. And Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm gonna so those are our top three. I'm gonna throw in my vote for Uncanny X-Force 18. It's just right when we talked about best issue, it was the first thing that jumped into my mind, and it was just such a good payoff for me. I just, I love Uncanny X-Force, and that was definitely the best issue of the run.
Yeah.
And I think the best superhero comic.
It's such a perfect issue.
Yeah. Well, let's just say this right now. It's not Ultimate Spider-Man. The same thing we're saying, that it's like a lot of the theme of Ultimate Spider-Man as a whole. I think as a single issue, it loses out to these, the power of these two as single issues.
Yeah, I think
so.
That's,
I definitely think it's not that one. So
I think I think Ultimate Spider-Man had the most impact of the year, certainly.
Right.
But I just, God, I love Uncanny
X-Force. Uncanny X-Force. Yeah, everything about it is so good.
So we go with Uncanny X-Force?
I will cede it to you because I could argue it much longer, but yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so so our top three were Fantastic Four 600, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man 1, and Uncanny X-Force 18. For all the people that say we don't like superhero comics, Uncanny
like
X-Force is the purest superhero comic,
it really is.
And it won Comic of the Year. All right, so moving on to Best Writer.
All right.
We got Jason Aaron, Brian Azzarello, Ed Brubaker, Jonathan Hickman, Joe Hill, Robert Kirkman, Jeff Lemire, Rick Remender, Scott Snyder, and Nick Spencer.
All right.
A lot of
top. Yeah. And most of these people worked on multiple good things this year. So we'll start out with Jason Aaron, who's been writing Wolverine and the X-Men, Scalped, and he wrote Schism.
He writes Wolverine.
So that's Jason Aaron. We got Brian Azzarello, who wrote Spaceman and the Batman... Night of Vengeance.
Flashpoint, Batman, Night of Vengeance.
Yeah. Ed Brubaker, who
does everything.
Scalped.
Captain America.
Not Scalped. He does everything but Scalped.
Scalped.
He does Captain America, very Criminal. Tight.
There, I think there was Incognito this
Something
year.
Fatal. No, I got nothing.
We got Jonathan Hickman, who's been writing the aforementioned Fantastic Four. And Red Wing.
Red Ring.
Yep.
Other stuff.
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, yeah, S.H.I.E.L.D. He
Secret
writes
Warriors.
Ultimates.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then we got Joe Hill, who writes The Cape and Lock and Key. Robert Kirkman, who writes all the comics. he writes Invincible and Walking Dead
Super Dinosaur. Infinite. I got to mention it.
You do. Jeff Lemire, who writes Animal Man and Sweet Tooth.
Infinite might get him off the list.
And Superboy, which shouldn't be forgotten because that was a very good
one. That was awesome, yeah.
Rick Remender, who writes
all the rest of it,
Uncanny X-Force, Venom.
Yeah, Venom, which is also awesome.
And does Taking Over Secret Avengers, although that doesn't
just
really
wrapped
matter.
Up Fear Agent, which was great.
Yeah, and Fear Agent, the last couple issues of that were fantastic. Scott Snyder, who's been very prolific this year and came out of nowhere. He's writing Batman.
He was writing
Detective Comics.
Swamp Thing.
And then Nick Spencer, who writes Morning Glories. And
Infinite. Vacation.
Infinite Vacation and some other
Ultimate
stuff.
Ultimate X-Men.
Yep.
And Iron Man 2.0.
Yep. All right. So that's that. Let's go through this list. Jason Aaron, I don't want to pull off just yet. Brian Azzarello, I could see pulling off.
I could see it as there's less work to deal
with.
Oh,
wait. He's also writing Wonder Woman.
Oh, he is.
Oh, nuts.
All right.
Let's not
pull Azzarello off just yet. Brubaker, I don't want to pull off just yet either.
Nope.
Hickman, I could see pulling.
Really?
I didn't think Red Wing was not the best. Didn't even
Red
Wing's our best
actually
miniseries.
Hurting him, I think, rather than helping him.
Yeah.
Nobody reads it, but S.H.I.E.L.D. is amazing as well.
It's
and Secret Warriors was really
the
good.
The end of
too.
Secret Warriors was pretty great.
Fantastic Four is
amazing.
Wow.
Fantastic Four and FF are both really
good. Okay, we can leave him for now, but that means we're going to be leaving everybody.
Yeah, keep going.
I think Joe Hill can come off. He's not going to make it into the top three, but he's a good writer.
Yeah.
I'll agree with that.
The Cape has been incredible, and Lock and Key throughout.
Yeah.
It's always been really good.
But I don't think he makes it in with like Kirkman and Scott Snyder.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, Robert Kirkman, I don't think we could even consider pulling off this list right now. I don't know.
Well,
I mean, it is a little more of the same. And Walking Dead hasn't had its strongest year, but it did have.
We'll have No Way Out.
Spoiler, the whole Carl thing.
Yeah.
Carl
got
shot.
Yeah. No Way Out was great.
And the Viltrumite War.
And Invincible had the Viltrumite War.
And Super Dinosaur, which won just one Best Kids comic.
Amazingness. Yeah.
But he also did Infinite. Ooh.
He did. That doesn't hurt him as much, though, because we know that Kirkman does these.
He's slumming for his old 90s friends.
Yeah, like he loves that 90s crap, and every once in a while he'll just write it, and it's like whatever. And he did Haunt, too, which is not the best. Rick Remender is doing some of the best writing in comics right now in Uncanny X-Force.
And Venom is so good. And he's going to be writing Secret Avengers in a little bit.
And Scott Snyder, I don't think we pull off this list just yet. So Nick Spencer can come off, and Joe Hill can come off, I think.
Nick Spencer, yeah.
Yeah.
Nick Spencer can come off.
Morning Glories is great, but Nick Spencer's other stuff this year has not
been
as good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesus.
We got eight left.
Yeah.
This is a tough one.
We've got eight left. So Let's go through again. Who's the top? Everybody pick their top guy.
Top guy?
I don't know if I can.
That's... I don't know. What is the list again?
Yeah, read off the eight.
Of who we have left, Jason Aaron, Brian Azzarello, Ed Brubaker, Jonathan Hickman, Robert Kirkman, Jeff Lemire, Rick Remender, and Scott Snyder.
Jason Aaron, yeah.
Is your top guy?
Yeah. I mean, Scalped is my favorite.
And Wolverine
comic
and the X-Men.
And Wolverine and the X-Men was really good.
That was, yeah, those two together are really
and
powerful.
And Schism was great.
Honestly, I think I might take Jeff Lemire off.
I could see that.
Like, he's really good, but...
Ooh, Sweet Tooth is so good.
Yeah, I know,
so
but... Compared to the rest of these guys, I think he might be like lower. In
yeah,
the
I mean, he did write the Atom stuff that wasn't really that great.
I would take Hickman off before Jeff Lemire.
Maybe. We'd take both of them off.
Yeah, honestly, let's take both of them
I
off.
Think both. Yeah.
All right. So
Hickman had a great year.
Oh
but,
man, Hickman did so much good stuff.
But, yeah, yeah, but all these guys.
But
did.
We're not as excited about him. So right
yeah,
there, that's
Ultimate
kinda
Ultimates hasn't been as good.
No, that's
yeah.
true.
Okay, so I think does Brian Azzarello come off?
No. I mean, Spaceman, Wonder Woman, and Flashpoint.
And that Batman Flashpoint thing was so cool.
Yeah. And Wonder Woman. God.
Wonder Woman, yeah. Right. Oh, jeez. Yeah, Wonder Woman and Spaceman alone together are just like alone together.
What about Brubaker?
Oh, man.
I know. This is so tough. This
yeah,
is...
His Captain America stuff was a little iffy this year.
Yeah, I think that's
I think
true.
It, well.
It was good, but it wasn't like.
I might take him off just because he did so well with the criminal votes earlier that I might let him slide a little bit on this one.
And Fatale is great, but it just, well, no, that's actually 2012. Yeah, I think Brubaker comes off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Remender comes off too. Uncanny X-Force is great, but.
Venom is so good. And Fear Agent. God.
wait. All right. So leave Remender on and take Brubaker off. What have we got?
Jason Aaron, Brian Azzarello, yeah. Jonathan Hickman.
Oh, we took Jonathan
Hickman off.
Okay. Jason Aaron, Brian Azzarello, Robert Kirkman, Scott Snyder, and Rick Remender. So that's five.
Okay, so five. We can
down to five.
That's fine.
That's, we get I think five. We're okay.
Can Kirkman come off this list?
Well,
I would pull Jason Aaron off before that.
Yeah, no way.
Nick loves him, and Scalped has been There's, amazing.
Yeah. Scalped and Wolverine and the X-Men.
Wolverine and X-Men was so good.
Those two together.
Yeah, I think we got to leave them on.
I think we take Brubaker off.
I think so, yeah.
I think Jason Aaron just had a great year just because, like, he changed all of X-Men, basically. And Wolverine and X-Men is the most revolutionary X-Men comic in a long time.
That's true.
I'm going to say I'm thinking it's going to be Jason Aaron, Robert Kirkman, and Scott Snyder.
So that takes off Brubaker and who?
Brian Azzarello.
And Azzarello.
And Azzarello.
Jeez.
I feel like Scott Snyder, we were forgetting something amazing that he wrote.
Batman.
And Detective
Swamp
Comics.
Swamp Thing. Yeah. Severed. And Detective Comics before that.
I kind of want to take Snyder off, actually.
Okay. I mean, he's...
Whoa, Nick.
I mean, we got to get it down. So, yeah, no, I mean, so we got to do... I mean, if there's... Obviously, all of us are backing all of these people. So it's like, if you think Snyder shouldn't be on the list,
I think
can
Snyder
go with that.
Should be there more than Kirkman.
Yeah.
I can. Okay, I'll go with that because Kirkman is great and steady, but Snyder is like new and awesome.
And he's had some. Yeah. I mean, just his Detective Comics alone was.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I would put Snyder over Azzarello.
Well, so if we do take off Kirkman and leave Snyder, what have we got? Four?
Yep. We got Jason Aaron, Brian Azzarello.
Snyder and two.
Rick Remender we didn't take off. I think Remender's got to come off.
Remender's losing out with the rest of these.
Yeah, just because, I mean, his stuff is amazing. But
yeah, it's just all these people are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So that leaves us with Jason Aaron, Brian Azzarello,
Scott Snyder. That sounds like a good three.
That's a good list.
That's a pretty good list.
The 10 list was amazing, but yeah, that's a good three.
All right, I'll concede to Jason Aaron. Just because he works so well doing something like Scalped and something like Wolverine and the X-Men, which are so different from
completely
each other.
Different tone.
But are both really, really fantastic books.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fact, because you got the thing like Warren Ellis writer who can jump genres, and you've got like someone who focuses like the best Superman writer ever, you know.
And I don't think you guys read it, but his Wolverine stuff.
I have not kept up with his regular Wolverine, but the beginning of it was
good. The last one of the last Wolverine stories he wrote was an entire six issues where these people are sending these villains to kill him. And so Wolverine kills them all one by one, and you get all of their backstories. And at the very end, when he kills the last one, all the bad guys kill themselves, and you find out they left him this message that all the villains he just killed were all his children. his bastard children throughout the years that they had collected and made into supervillains.
I did read that.
That sounds
one.
Really melodramatic.
It's brutal. Yeah. But it was brutal.
So that this is tough, but I don't think there's any really actually right way to do this.
No.
These guys all had really good years. Some of the early things we took off, like Joe Hill and Nick Spencer, I think made a lot of sense.
Simpler.
But it's like, you know, in a list where Kirkman's not in the top three,
it's like we're
gonna
crazy.
Be pretty tough. The only thing, I don't know if I said Jason Aaron, but I don't know if that's right. But
all
right,
so
I'll
Jason
go with
Aaron.
It.
Hold on.
Jason Aaron, Brian Azzarello, and Rick Remender is what...
No, Snyder.
Scott Snyder is what we left down there.
Because Snyder did the same thing. He had the severed...
I'm going to go with Scott Snyder just because he's had the freshest voice of all these people.
I think that's true.
He's definitely come out of nowhere, and everything he wrote was amazing.
I can go with that.
There wasn't a single thing he wrote that was not...
I think that's true, and I think these other people...
Had a few blips.
Yeah, or just things that aren't, like, surprisingly amazing, like
that's
the Scott
true.
Snyder stuff.
Yeah.
We can go with Scott Snyder. I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
I think he's written a lot of good books this year.
Yeah.
All these people have.
Yeah.
We didn't have a single person on here that hasn't written two or three really fantastic
awesome stuff,
things.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think we're going to go with Scott Snyder.
Hey.
All right, so we just have, we got two categories left, but they're big ones.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, snap.
Okay, so first up is best ongoing series.
What do you got?
We got some stuff. We got FF, kind of slash Fantastic Four.
Yeah,
same thing.
Invincible, Scalped, Sweet Tooth, Uncanny X-Force, Walking Dead, Morning Glories, Sixth Gun, Ultimate Spider-Man, and Gladstone School for World Conquerors. So let's start out with...
Whoa.
I know, some crazy stuff on
it's
here.
All over the place.
Let's start out with FF.
FF slash Fantastic Four has been pretty great. It's been a kind of a... drastic change because Johnny Storm died, and then we decided to start this foundation where he brought all these young kids that are gifted and talented, and Dr. Doom became part of the future foundation.
Yep.
And they've been kind of had slower stories that kind of built up on top of each other until culminating in this big story that's happening now back in Fantastic Four number 600, 601, so on.
I think it just kind of acknowledged that there's a huge supporting cast for the Fantastic Four universe that doesn't get used as much as they should, and he did a great job with it.
Yeah, I mean, Hickman's run has been up there with Kirby and Burns as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Next up, we've got Invincible, which has been crazy this year with the whole Viltrumite War and all the relationship stuff with Mark and Eve
and the crazy
and her pregnancy.
And the recent twists where Mark's almost kind of like a supervillain.
Yeah.
Interesting steps.
Yeah, it's been really good stuff. And then we've got Scalped.
Nick's got to take
Scalped
that one.
Scalped is definitely one of my favorite comics of all time. It's just always, always consistently awesome. Like, it's great crime stuff. There's individual issues about characters, and there's great, like, everything about it is great. All the characterization, like, you know, there's, like, the young guy who... got caught up in drugs and lives with his grandmother. There's the woman that takes care of pregnant women. There's like all such a great, huge cast and this big story that's building, and it's about to culminate. And it's had a good year. Like,
I think that's one of the things for this year is it's you can feel it building towards the conclusion, which is coming. So a lot of like stuff that started really early is starting to pay off, and like things are really coming to a head between a lot of these characters.
And issue 50 should have been in our top single issue thing. I just thought about it, but whatever.
Too late for that now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
issue 50 was amazing. Yeah. And then we've got Sweet Tooth, which is by Jeff Lemire, and that's been continuing on its amazing path. There have been some crazy stuff this year, like them finding that kind of greenhouse place where they were staying, and then the stuff with Sweet Tooth getting shot.
And there's the three issues by Matt Kent, drawn by Matt Kent, which kind of tell maybe a story that predates. Well, it tells a story that predates the events that may actually be really important.
Yep. And then we've got Uncanny X-Force, which we've talked about at great length, I feel like, already.
And not saying, but just
but
as
the
a
Dark
whole,
Angel saga, which took up pretty much the whole year, was just,
epic.
You know, for me, epic comics, superhero stuff at its best. And then we've got Walking Dead.
Yeah, like we mentioned in the last segment, Walking Dead. It seemed to have a little bit of a slowdown, like he kind of goes through those moments where things kind of reset a little bit. But it definitely brought a lot of new characters into conflict with everyone and had one of the most unexpectedly shocking moments in Walking Dead, which is saying a lot, involving Carl, of course. And again, some interesting mental issues with a lot of the characters.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like that the main cast is almost becoming, they're almost becoming bad guys in a way,
true.
Which is something that's been slowly happening and is now starting to happen a little bit more rapidly and is really interesting.
And a good twist with the last issue of the year.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the last issue was great. And then we've got Morning Glories.
Morning Glories has been consistently awesome. Good little, like, it's definitely feels like a spiritual successor to Lost. If anybody liked Lost, they should probably read Morning Glories. It's about a bunch of kids that get sent to this boarding school, most of them not by choice.
Yep.
And they all have really crazy backstories that are slowly revealed a little bit at a time. And you get to learn more about this school. And they have very distinct voices, like each character. And there's awesome mystery building.
Yeah, they jump like character viewpoints too. Like they even tell like sometimes from the people running the school, it gives you different perspectives, yeah. And it just all fits together so well.
Yeah, and the current storyline is like it's all in one day, but each issue is from a different perspective.
Yeah,
so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and things are never quite what they seem, which is what keeps Morning Glory is very interesting.
Yeah,
and then we've got Sixth Gun.
Sixth Gun is still, I think, one of my favorites coming out now. It's just like a brilliant mashup of horror and Western, which has been tried a lot when you think about it for comics in particular, but just. Is just like a straight ahead, really good character driven Western series that just happens to involve a huge set of six gun pistols that all have magical powers.
Yeah.
Which just works together very well. I mean, the art helps a lot, but it's amazing.
Plus there was an issue with the Mummy and Abraham Lincoln.
Yep.
That's true.
And voices.
And then we've got Ultimate Spider-Man, or Ultimate Comics Spider-Man. We're sort of including the end of Ultimate Spider-Man in this as well, a little bit, the death of Peter Parker
which
stuff and Ultimate Fallout.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and then all the Miles Morales stuff, which we've talked about already, but it's been a great series. And then we've got Gladstone School for World Conquerors.
Oh, man. This, again, like another superhero one with just enough of a twist that makes it brilliant where, you know, instead of having the young school for kids who are all trying to become superheroes, it's all of them trying to become supervillains. And that on its own is a fun enough twist, but then they throw in the extra twist to it that, in fact, there is a pact between the superheroes and supervillains of the universe to stage all their fights just for, like, publicity and stuff. But all these kids think they're literally growing up to become real villains, and so there's, like, the hidden dynamic between the kids and their parents.
And then as they begin to find out, they sort of start a revolution, and it's very cool.
Yeah.
All right, so this is going to be another tough category, I feel like, to pull stuff from. So let's just go through and see what doesn't quite make the cut first off. Fantastic Four / FF. Do we want to leave that on there for right now? Okay.
A lot happened in that.
Yeah, no, that's understandable. Invincible. I could see Invincible coming off of this list. It has been a really good year for Invincible.
I had a little bit of a lull for a few issues, but...
Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe not take it off quite yet.
That's iffy, but yeah, leave it on.
Scalped, that's a tough one to take off, especially when I'm thinking about that issue 50, which was so good.
Yeah,
and like you guys said, it's really building up right now.
Yeah,
I could see Sweet Tooth coming off the list, to be honest. I love Sweet Tooth, but there's a lot of really good stuff on here.
Yeah, I feel like Sweet Tooth will read great as like when you have the whole story done. I don't know if this year...
Month to month. This has actually, I think, been the best year for Sweet Tooth.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
It's... I mean, we can leave it on for now. We're going to have to cut some stuff out.
That's another iffy one, iffy.
Uncanny X-Force for me does not come off of this list.
Even with switching artists, it was switching to other great artists. It wasn't ever like they had fill-in people and the story just built and built.
Walking Dead, not its strongest year, maybe.
Yeah,
I'll say that. But it did have like those two big events.
No Way Out.
The final story, the No Way Out, and Carl. Those three points are all pretty strong.
Yeah, I think the final story is going to be more of like a next year thing where that's really going to get going.
Yeah.
I think we got to cut one.
I guess.
I know, these are all really good.
Yeah. All right. I'm okay with that.
Morning Glories for me doesn't make it into the top three. Mm-hmm. I know it's one of Nick's favorites, but... We'll have to see how Jared feels about it.
It's definitely consistently good. I don't know. This other competition's pretty stiff.
Yeah.
But is that like you want to leave it on for now? Or
no, let's... I mean, we're going to have to cut stuff.
Okay. We're going to have to cut some stuff, yeah. I think we cut Six Gun as well, unfortunately.
Yeah. I think the first storylines were really the strongest of it. I don't know.
It's still a great series.
Lincoln and Mummies are...
Yeah, the last storylines were really good, too.
Yeah.
But
I can see taking it off, though. I'm okay with that.
Okay, and then Ultimate Spider-Man.
Oof,
it's so good. but it's still also very early. I think it's cheating to say we're going to include the old series in it as well. It's not, that's not really the way it works.
It's part of it, and it's still the same writer.
Honestly, dropping the old series, I think the new story is strong enough to stay on its own. Unlike a lot of series with four or five issues wouldn't make it, I think so far it would.
Okay, so we'll leave that on for now. I think Gladstone is maybe the dark horse that made it onto the top 10 and maybe doesn't.
Man. Yeah, I can see that. It's
fun.
It's, and it's fun and great, but
and
not
it's
like,
funny, but yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that's all right. Is that all right with you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. All right. So that leaves
so
us with
like two or three there.
Fantastic Four, Invincible, Scalped, Uncanny. We took off Sweet Tooth.
Yeah.
Okay. Uncanny X-Force. We took off Walking Dead. Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Ultimate Spider-Man. So that's only five.
Some of those were iffy, but we just dropped them. We talked about them enough.
Yeah. So FF, Invincible, Scalped, Uncanny X-Force, Ultimate Spider-Man.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Well, I think FF can come off the list.
I don't know.
Yeah, FF had those three issues that were like about Black Bolt.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Honestly, I didn't read the last two of those. I disliked the first one so much, so that's a good
one. I thought they were good, but they're definitely not like best
first
of
one
the year.
They were definitely a huge like
lull.
Momentum killer.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so that brings us to...
But then it got back to
that's
amazing.
True.
But
that's true, but that hurt a little bit.
Invincible, Scalped, Uncanny X-Force, and Ultimate Spider-Man.
See, if Invincible, I feel most of the Ultimate War was last year.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
true.
In the last issue, there was a huge gap. There was like two or three months where it didn't come out. And then a few of the issues after that were just kind of okay.
Well,
some
I mean,
of the last few... I mean, they're good.
But you could say the same thing about Walking Dead. So it's like,
yeah,
I'm really happy with, Scalped, Uncanny X-Force and Ultimate Spider-Man being our three books.
Oh, okay. Cause yeah, I thought that we were,
Scalped,
Uncanny X-Force and Ultimate Spider-Man.
What was the one we were just on?
Walking Dead or Invincible are both still kind of on there, but I think I'm agreeing
those
with
are, those
Kevin
are good.
There.
Yeah, those are good.
Okay. So Scalped, Uncanny X-Force and Ultimate Spider-Man, I'm just going to say Uncanny X-Force, for me, is the best ongoing series of the year. The Dark Angel Saga was, for me, I don't even like X-Men comics.
Yeah.
I mean, I've come to like them a little bit more, but I've always found them to be very, very convoluted and sort of, you know, catch as catch can and just kind of making it up as they go along a lot of the time.
I think over time, it's my favorite comic, and I think over time it'll end up, I'll like it more, but this year just Uncanny X-Force was just, it was the year of Uncanny X-Force. It was so huge and so good and just,
And I think like for Ultimate Spider-Man, like I said, it's strong enough to stand on this list of 10, even with just five issues.
And even on the top three, but,
but
it is just five issues.
At the beginning of the storyline, it doesn't have like the build up that Uncanny X-Force had where it had already, it goes so quickly to such an epic place.
Also,
it's building up to something, you know?
Also, so. I feel like Scalp maybe only had like six or seven issues this year. It's been coming out kind of slow. Whereas Uncanny X-Force had like 19 issues or something, something like that.
That's true. So so we're pretty happy with Uncanny X-Force?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Uncanny X-Force, best ongoing series. So that was Scalped, Uncanny X-Force, and Ultimate Spider-Man with Uncanny X-Force taking it.
Yeah.
And people say we don't like superhero comics.
I know.
That's right.
All
right.
So I think this next category is going to, it's our last. So thanks for sticking around.
Hopefully.
Hopefully you guys are still listening. I think this is turning out pretty well, though.
Yes.
So this is best graphic novel.
We left it for last because it's maybe the hardest one.
Yeah, we've probably read more graphic novels this year than
any other year.
We've discussed it. I mean, we're trying to read a lot more for the podcast, but I feel like this was just such a good year for comics in general, but especially in the form of collections and graphic novels.
So going through the list, we've got, in no particular order, Tale of Sand, Habibi, Green River Killer, Troop 142, The Cabbie, The Forming, Infinite Kung Fu, Old City Blues, Pinocchio, and Prison Pit 3.
Oh, my God.
I know. It's insane.
Ridiculous.
So let's just start. We'll start off with Tale of Sand, which was, I think we might have already talked about it earlier, but it's an unproduced Jim Henson screenplay drawn by Ramon Perez. It's this kind of crazy stream of consciousness, chase scene, surrealist
Monty Python
thing with beautiful art, and the pacing of it is just great.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a mad world by Salvador Dali or something.
Well, it's got great coloring, like changes the tone very often.
Just like constant excitement. You never know what's going to happen, but the story works so well and just, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And then we've got Habibi.
Yeah.
By Craig Thompson.
Maybe the best book of the all time. I don't know. It's really good.
Well, we can't say that yet. We're not done.
We can't say that yet.
basically, I mean, Craig Thompson working on this book for 7 years.
Yeah, we can say what it's about.
What is it about?
I try to explain.
We talked
to
like
people
for an hour. Well,
it's a story of a woman and a boy who were both slaves that escaped and kind of ended up entwined. Their lives ended up entwined, and it mixes with stories of the from the Quran and a little bit about Arabic and the language, and kind of in this weird, maybe present, this own kind of fantasy world.
Yeah, that's half
a mythical Arabian land.
Yeah, it mixes,
but that's also mixed with, I mean, there are parts of it that take place on like the roof of a half built skyscraper
I said mythical, the idea like everything that formed or has formed the Middle East. It's amazing.
And it's it's at its heart a really well told love story.
Yeah.
But the craft and the artwork is just fantastic.
Yeah.
Green River Killer.
This one was an interesting one because it was an actual true crime entry into the crime field where the son of a detective who investigated a serial killer in Seattle grew up with his dad investigating this guy for like 25 years or something until they finally caught him. And so you get the interesting like perspective of him growing up and telling it from his point of view and having inside sources on it. But the other thing is that the framework is they've caught the guy. And so now they're trying to get him to confess to all the crimes and make sure, you know, did we miss someone who got murdered? Where are all the bodies hidden? And it's a very deep psychological thing of trying to get close enough to a serial killer to get that connection out.
And a couple of things that I think are really interesting about this that make it not just a straight up true crime thing are, for one, the killer is kind of
sympathetic. Especially
early in the graphic, he's very sympathetic, and he did these things, but he's so old now, and it's like so far into his past. But as they start to reveal some of these crimes,
that's the thing,
and
that,
the
like,
nature of them,
you don't know everything about what he did. You know that he killed people. You don't know how or why and what he did.
They're still investigating it. Yeah,
but then you're like at the beginning, he's like, oh, he's a killer. He had some crazy things happen to him, and he did these things. And then you're like, oh, he's kind of sympathetic almost. And then you see how really terrible the things he did were.
Mixed in with a great story about like this guy finding respect for his father, and like, you know, it's great. It's really great. And then we've got Troop 142 by Mike Dawson, which is about a bunch of kids in a Boy Scout camp in the summer. And and what I love about this is it's just how well it shows like how kids really are.
Yeah,
and like how they're all like little sons of bitches.
Yeah, like some and people read this and complained about it, but that's
what it's like. Yeah, that's what it's like. It's
accurate
like,
portrayal of young.
Yeah, were you never 11 or 12?
Coming of age boys, yeah.
Oh, the other important thing is like it's not like you're 11 or 12 hanging out with your best friends. This is like 11 or 12-year-olds who are thrown together with like mutual age people or sometimes older who they haven't shared activity but not necessarily shared friendship at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. It's got almost like a Lord of the Flies, but like
a little bit of meatballs,
but with like a sneaky Lord of the Flies, where like the grown-ups are there, but they don't actually know about all of it.
Right,
but it's very great. Next up, we have The Cabbie by Marti.
Oh god, this is one of my favorites of the year. This came out of nowhere. I'd never even heard of Marti before this, and then this is just—I didn't know what to expect going into it, and
no one did.
And it was like the craziest trip I've ever been on. It was just like, oh, this guy's a cabbie and he's a vigilante. They're just like heroin addicts. Oh, he's drowning in feces. Oh, wait, what is it? Just got crazier and crazier, and I just was in love with everything that was happening.
Yeah, it's very like a Taxi Driver by way of Charles Burns or something, but with like a crazy sense of humor.
A little bit
as
of
well.
Dick Tracy thrown in.
Yeah. This one's a little weird on the list just because this has been printed before, so it almost made it into the best reprint. But it's such like a story of its own that I think it really does belong in best graphic novel.
Yeah, definitely.
And then we've got The Forming by Jesse Moynihan, which is definitely one of my favorites of the year.
Volume one,
which is exciting.
Yeah.
This is a book that was put out by Nobrow Press, who are a great little British company that have been started doing some great stuff. But this is like a crazy sci-fi book about demigods and like
mixed
this
with
guy
Bible
who's
stuff.
Yeah, whose kids are prophesied to kill him, mixed with like
history of the world and
sci-fi,
Moses aliens.
Yeah, we talked about Forming already on one of the other podcasts. There's a lot going on in this book.
Really weird, really disturbing.
And the art awesome. And the art is very idiosyncratic, yeah, very definitely. Colorful
and really funny.
And really, and the book is hilarious.
Yeah.
Next up is Infinite Kung Fu by Keegan MacLeod.
Oh my God. I've read about this like 8 times on the podcast before, but it's basically, to sum it up, it's set in a, you know, medieval mythical Chinese land, where basically the three influences are a mashup of 70s films, of blaxploitation films, 70s zombie films, and 70s kung fu, and like the crazy kung fu where someone will like rip off his arm, pummel someone to death, and then reattach it with his mystical kung fu powers. But it's done as like an epic story.
And the art is very,
what'd you call it?
Calligraphic? Is that a word? It's got like a kind of calligraphy style that kind of, maybe in a way, emulates, like the kanji.
Like the old Chinese scroll work that it would fit in this, you know, if all those Chinese masters wanted to show, you know, kung fu masters punching off zombie heads.
Yeah, it's like beautiful, dynamic brushwork, yeah. And the strokes have a lot of life to them.
And one of the few guys I've seen that actually could show, like, action very well through on the page. You did a really good job of showing that.
No, it's great. And then we've got Old City Blues, which I can't remember the guy's name. I wish I had written down some more of these.
Yanis Milonakis?
That's what I was going to say, and I was like, no, it's not Milonakis. That's Andy Milonakis. Yeah, this is a sci-fi story a la Blade Runner or Pluto, where it's
a little bit of Ghost in the Shell.
It takes place in New Athens, which is interesting. Instead of being a futuristic LA or Tokyo, it's actually taking place in futuristic Greece. And it's about robot murders and
detectives and
politics and corruption and fighting robots.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Next up, we've got Pinocchio.
Another one of my top choices. This was probably the most surprising thing I read this year, because I looked at it and I was like, oh, this looks pretty cool. It looks kind of up my alley, like kind of gross, kind of weird. But there's very little dialogue in it. And I was like, oh, maybe this will be pretty good. But once I started like going through it, the art is so incredible. There's so much. It's so dense, even without minimal dialogue, that it feels like I read like 3,000 pages of story in, you know, this little over 100 page book or whatever. And it's just, it takes the Pinocchio story and makes it bananas. Like Jiminy Cricket's like a drunk that lives in Pinocchio's eye socket, and Pinocchio is a robot, and then there's children being thrown into ovens, and it's crazy.
Terrible Sleeping Beauty retelling, and all messed up.
And then last, speaking of messed up, we've got Prison Pit Volume 3.
Yep.
Prison Pit by Johnny Ryan is, I think, one of all of our favorites right here.
Yeah.
It's basically Johnny Ryan's take on fight comics, like being like Dragon Ball Z or something like that. The previous two volumes were basically just fights, but this one takes on kind of a surrealist sci-fi.
It's mostly just fights too.
It is. But then there are just some crazy,
yeah,
like David Lynchian, Dune-ish crazy things happening too.
Yeah. Plus it ups the ante with a guy who might be able to take on.
Yeah, this is the volume where
the protagonist.
Yes. This is the volume where a story started to form
after two books.
This is the only comic this year that I bought a $60 toy of.
Oh,
fair point. And it's awesome. So this is going to be a tough list to whittle down.
Yep.
So let's just start at the top. Tale of Sand. I'd like to leave that on for right now.
Yep.
Habibi is going to stay on.
Yeah.
I think Green River Killer is going to stay on.
Yeah. keep going.
Trip 142. I love, but I can see it coming off of this list.
Yeah. There's like amazing books, and then
this is an amazing book.
No, I'm saying like it's an amazing book. I think the other ones will push it down a little bit.
Especially those first three. I mean,
I can see The Cabbie coming off of this list as well.
Yeah,
I love it, but it's like it's one of those books where it's like lucky to make the top 10, even though it's amazing.
I don't know about lucky.
No, it belongs on the top 10. I don't mean it that way. I just mean,
but yeah,
it's.
It's like a shock,
it's like a little more novel,
yes,
than like
yeah,
the substantive like some of these other things.
Right.
The forming I would like to leave on, but I can understand.
I think it falls into the same realm as The Cabbie in some ways. That it's like
it's a little too weird and it's not really complete because it kind of just stops.
Yeah, that's true. Infinite Kung Fu I think stays on for now.
Oh yes, please.
Old City Blues I had to fight to get onto the top 10 in the first place. I love that book so much, but I
think again it's the others are going to push it down.
Yeah. Pinocchio, I actually haven't read.
God, that's my That's my top seed. One of my top seeds.
All right, we'll leave it on for now. Prison Pit 3, we all love, but it is Volume 3. And, yeah. You know, it's not. I don't know. I love
standing against the rest of these on its own. It's not strong enough.
It's tough. All right. So that leaves us with Tale of Sand, Habibi, Green River Killer, Infinite Kung Fu, and Pinocchio.
Oh, five again. That's good. We're getting down to half. All right.
All right. So let's go through again.
Oof. Okay.
I think Pinocchio, for me, comes off the list just because I haven't read it.
Yeah.
I would take it off as well. Like, I didn't love it like Nick loved it, so I'm not going to have it as strong. So
that's fine. You guys can veto me.
No. I don't want to veto. I want to hear you defend it again. Then I'll veto it.
There's nothing. Not much more I could say.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, it could certainly almost make it. There are just too many good things.
I think the level of crazy and creativeness in it is still not strong enough compared to the rest of these things. At least for me.
So,
but again, I like more than forming. That's for sure.
But yeah, I can see Forming coming off.
Wait,
yeah.
Forming was still in there? We took
it. No, it came. No, it came off.
Yeah, yeah.
Now what we have left is Tale of Sand, Habibi, Green River Killer, and Infinite Kung Fu.
I think I got the top three there.
Take it. What you got?
I got Habibi.
Yep.
Green River Killer.
Yep.
And Infinite Kung Fu.
I'm gonna say Habibi, Green River Killer, and Tale of Sand.
I'm gonna go with Nick. As much as I love Tale of Sand, wow, God, all right, you got a good point.
Habibi and Green River Killer are definitely on here. So between Tale of Sand and Infinite Kung Fu.
I want to go Infinite Kung Fu because I loved it more, but there might be more craft in the storytelling of Tale of Sand.
And it's Jim Henson. And it's his lost.
He's not going to come over and shake our hands for voting for him. Don't count it that way.
But Infinite Kung Fu is a really nice, full, well-realized story. But at its heart, it's basically just an action story, right? Like, there's not a lot under the surface that might be true of Tale of Sand as well, though. So I don't know.
But yeah, are we going for deep or like awesome comics?
Well, we're just going for our favorites.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's
I don't know. I think Tale of Sand might overrule Infinite Kung Fu.
Because I might
we
say,
can we can because it's best graphic novel we can do a top four, but I think we should do a top three.
Yeah, we should do top three. I still want to do Infinite Kung Fu.
Okay, I think that's fair. I think it's tough.
What's your choice, Kevin?
My choice is still Tale of Sand, Habibi, and Green River Killer. Right, but if you guys both pick Infinite
doing
Kung Fu,
Tale of Sand,
I think I might say Tale of Sand.
I think I think they're both respectable choices.
I'm gonna let go to Tale of Sand without complaint.
Yeah, I don't think any of us will complain about that top three.
Yeah. Just Tale of Sand is just so perfect. Like, and it's you can read it quickly
I forgot for a second the thing where he had like taken the comics, the movie script, and used it as like background behind panels.
That's really cool.
That stuff is great.
They're pulling off more with comics than they did a lot of.
Yeah, there was
a
little more innovative. There was also the thing where the football player spoke and plays.
Oh God, that was
which is really neat.
It was amazing.
Well, that's what I mean about Infinite Kung Fu again. It's a great, fun story, but it's, I don't know, it's just, yeah, it is
amazingly epic.
But then Green River Killer, I mean, I think a lot of people might disagree with us about
that's
that one.
True.
But I, for some reason, that story just hit me. The opening scene in Green River Killer is almost enough to put it on the list.
Yeah, right.
I just thought it was the most, I don't know, it was just the thing that affected me the most emotionally, I think, just going through it. You went through everything, every feeling in your life.
Yeah, I mean, Habibi had a big emotional impact when I was reading that as well.
That too,
But I'm pretty happy with Tale of Sand, Habibi, and Green River Killer as the top three.
Yep.
Are we pretty happy with that?
Yes.
Pretty good.
All right, so on the count of three, let's all say what our number one choice is. One, two, three. Is yours really Green River Killer,
no, I'm
Jared?
Messing with you.
Oh, I think it's Habibi.
Yeah,
right?
I think we already
like Habibi.
It's transcendent.
It's like... There's so much to it, and it's almost you have to work to go through it. It's not like a comic you're reading for just pure entertainment. There's just so much going on, and you have to think about it. It's a work of art.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a masterpiece. So,
the story is like a really impactful. I mean, like, you know, I got a little choked up at points when I was reading it, and you just root for the characters so much,
and it's so heartbreaking.
But beyond that stuff, which is just the story, it's so heartbreaking. But beyond that, it's the art is beyond anything.
He does so much with the art and the story. It's like the stories within stories, and like all the themes that interweave back and forth, and like how the fictional stories she tells are relevant or like are foreshadowing of stuff like that happens later, and like the art has so many levels to it.
I feel like 10 pages in, I knew this was going to be like the best comic of the year.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about whether or not it's the best graphic novel of all time, to be honest.
And I think it might be.
As a conversation. Yeah. I mean, there might be things that I have more fun with.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Or enjoy reading more.
But just overall Infinite craft Kung Fu. And story and everything. Just...
But like, I want to read Habibi again.
Yeah.
Like, now.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow, that was a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So
it was a good year.
Yeah. So are we pretty happy with all of our choices?
Yeah.
Yep.
I think so.
I'm excited about 2012.
Yeah. I think 2012 is already off to a good start with Fatale. I think that'll end up in our best miniseries next time. We're only like a week in, but
yeah. See you 53 weeks from now.
It might be forgotten. We'll see if DC relaunches their whole universe again to get all their books on our best new series list again.
Or if Marvel does it.
the Marvel new 616.
They have 616 new series. 616 new series. So cool.
Yeah.
I don't even know what else to say.
I think the thing to say is that don't forget these will all be posted up online on our webpage and on our Facebook page.
You can vote for your favorite.
Yes. Yeah. We'll put up our 10 categories so you guys can vote on it. Or you could also comment and say we're complete idiots for getting something because we might have forgot something great.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, we'll talk about the stuff that wins on the Facebook polls in the next couple podcasts.
Yep.
I had a lot of fun doing this.
Yeah. Me too.
This was our favorite comics of the year.
Man. We read a lot of comics this year.
Yeah, we did.
So thanks for listening.
We read all most of 90 of these. Like, these are 90 books that we all kind of read.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of stuff. All right, cool. Well, we'll see you guys next week for Big Planet Podcast 29. And have a good whatever else you're doing.
A good 2012.
We'll see you guys later.
All right.